Welcome, everybody, to a holiday edition of One Up Yours podcast for Friday, July the 4th. Wait a minute. We have a Brit amongst us.
Yeah, isn't this a sad day for you, John?
I'm not sure what I'm supposed to feel.
You should feel defeat.
Defeat, but, you know, glad that you took me to your bosom.
Wow. Wow. Get away
from
my bosom.
That's after the recording, man.
What? All right.
So you're wearing that Evil Avatar t-shirt, so your bosom looks quite attractive right now.
Oh, dear.
Wow.
All right, everybody. So here we go. This is Garnet, and around me I have Andrew and Shane and Philip and John the Brit.
Hello.
We got a great show for you coming up today. We're gonna do. We're gonna change the order of things a little bit. It's a new liturgy for us, and we're gonna do what you've been playing in the first segment. In the second segment, we're gonna go ahead and roll the new segment because, as many of you will already know, in the third segment we have the special guest visit from Mr. Dennis Dyack, who has a very intellectual treatise on where we are right now in the state of community message boards and their interrelationship with video game journalism.
I like to use the you use the word liturgy because Dennis delivered a sermon.
Yes. So, there you go. And that's what we have coming up for you on the show today, sports fans. And I hope everyone's enjoying a good and safe 4th of July. And just because we did it last week, I'm going to do it again because they're out there fighting even harder. Thanks go out to the Cal Fire teams who are out busting their asses trying to save Big Sur and the rest of the state, which is embroiled in the most wildfires in recorded history for California. It's a bummer, man. Those guys back and forth, like, they finish one fire, they go racing across the state to go someplace else. So, thanks, guys, for your hard work. Now, let's talk about what we've been playing. Who's been playing anything?
Who's been playing anything?
Andrew, how's the Top Gun theme on Guitar Hero?
Why, non-existent, Carl. Oh. Thanks for asking. Now, right before the show, we were recording this on Thursday night, and it was supposed to come out on July 3rd, the Top Gun anthem, which goes...
And it's Steve Stevens of the Billy Idol Band and Harold Faltermeyer of Axel F. theme together in one powerful wailing shredding moment of rock.
I believe they were the first supergroup ever.
Axel F. was the
Beverly Hills Cop. Yeah, Harold Faltermeyer on the longest piano you've ever seen. Apparently, there's no piano part in the theme, but in the video, he's there playing the piano. Steve Stevens in some kind of gold lame flight suit.
You sure that wasn't an organ?
No, it wasn't an organ.
Maybe the piano was hooked up to a guitar amp, like with overdrive piano.
And but Steve Stevens, with his hair at its most large, which, you know, and he had some big hair.
I have no idea who these guys are.
Stevens was Billy Idol's guitarist.
Okay.
Big, black, spiky hair.
Can't play.
Went on to form a band called the Atomic Playboys that did absolutely nothing.
Oh, that's a bummer.
But and now he's back with Billy Idol. But yeah, him, like, shredding.
Unfortunately, it wasn't on the store. As of recording time right
so
now.
But it wasn't on the PSN store. I wonder if it was on the 360 store.
I was playing the PS3.
It was in the game update, right?
I don't know.
It was in the message of the day.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It was
in the game. In-game
message of the day in Guitar Hero 3 says it's available now, and then it wasn't.
So there's like some kind of weird synchronization issue going on.
I just wanted
there.
To get my hands on it before we recorded, but I didn't.
What about Guitar Hero Aerosmith? You've been playing
The reason I was in Guitar Hero.
Nice. Because
I've been reviewing Aerosmith.
And?
It's Guitar Hero 3 with Aerosmith.
No!
Yeah?
But,
I mean...
But other good jams,
curveball.
Right?
Curveball. Yeah, I mean, the rest of the non-Aerosmith songs.
Did I not correctly read that there's a Cult song in there?
Yeah, there's one there.
There's also
one?
Several Steve Perry songs.
Yeah, and a...
Really?
Yeah. No, Joe Perry.
Joe Perry, that's really different.
Joe Perry solo stuff?
Yeah, Joe Perry solo stuff.
There's a Lenny Kravitz song. That kind of confused me.
The most confusing song is that Sex Type thing from Stone Temple Pilots is in there in like the fifth or sixth tier. And up until that point, the entire set list was like really cool, like Aerosmith, old Aerosmith.
Yeah, yeah.
Bluesy rock kind of stuff. And then Stone Temple Pilots was in there. I like the song, but it just
didn't
really make sense.
The whole conceit is to fill up the 45 songs, isn't it? Aerosmith and anyone that's ever supported Aerosmith.
Or their influences or something like that, yeah. So they must have toured with Stone Temple Pilots at some point. But it's... The charts are improved. I've been playing on hard. That's my preferred difficulty.
Right.
And with regular Guitar Hero 3, there was definitely a brick wall that hit me, I think, about in the fifth tier.
Dude.
Where I just could not do it, and I had to have Nick, like, get me past it. Especially on certain songs. But this one was pretty even consistently throughout all the tiers. So
all I know is...
And the boss battle. There's only one boss battle against Joe Perry, and it's optional.
Which is awesome.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's smart, because especially like the devil.
I tried it three times and just got so annoyed by it.
Yeah, this is totally frustrating. I was going to say, like, there were a couple of the Aerosmith songs that I had a blast playing on the preview build, like Love in an Elevator.
Yeah, that one's good.
Both fucking awesome.
It's the One Up Yours cast humming thing episode.
Both versions of Walk This Way are fun. The Run DMC version.
Oh, they have the Run DMC version in there?
They have King of Rock by Run DMC as the lead up in that tier. So
that's kind of fucking cool.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm agreeing with this.
I kind of like Aerosmith. I've always kind of liked them. I don't know if I would buy this on my own. I don't know if I like them that much. It's what you and I have always been saying. It should have been coming out as a DLC, like super pack, like the same way that the Who is coming out on.
So how much would you have paid for it as a DLC pack? Because presumably not 45 songs DLC.
No, I would have picked and choose like the Aerosmith songs. I would have spent maybe 10 to 15 bucks on the songs I like.
I bet I would have spent at least 20, if not 25.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of good songs, and they're not really any real stinkers that I noticed, but it's one particular subgenre of music.
Right. But it's a really good subgenre for Guitar Hero.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, it does reinforce the problem with, like, where's the DLC content? If you look at the Rock Band announcement, I mean, we're going to see more of that at E3.
Well, at least the Rock Band stuff, everything is backwards compatible, but Aerosmith isn't, right?
No,
it's not Guitar Hero 3.
It's a disc.
Right.
It's a disc.
There's no, you can't download Guitar Hero 3 tracks into it.
But backwards compatible does not necessarily mean forwards compatible.
No, they said it was,
Does it? I haven't actually looked at
anything.
That. If you have Rock Band 1, will you continue to be able to buy new DLC once Rock Band 2 comes out?
They
you
did
will?
Say that they you would be able to do that.
That's
right?
Good. That's cool then. That's so, you don't have to buy, so you don't have to buy Rock Band 2?
I think not if Shane you don't want to. Was raving the other, it has to be a platform, and right. sounds yep. like it is.
Yeah. So basically, Rock Band 2 then is the Rock Band equivalent of Guitar Hero Aerosmith. It's just basically, the only reason you would buy it would be to get the disc.
Yeah, and there's going to be some, we'll get to that. It's in news. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it then.
Small tweaks to the hardware.
Yeah.
You know that. You were there.
Yeah. I mean,
they're small, but
Rock Band 1.1.
Yeah.
Seriously. Anyway.
All
right.
And that's pretty much all I've been playing this week. It's been a really busy week. I'm getting ready to go home for the next 10 days in Wisconsin, so I haven't had much time.
And celebrate the comeback? The big comeback. The what? Out of retirement.
Oh, pending. We'll see. Minicamp starts.
Wait, he's coming back?
Maybe.
Favre's coming back.
No, yeah. Again?
Favre's coming back.
Reportedly, he has the itch.
Surprise.
Well, he should scratch it somewhere else.
Arena League, I think.
He should probably get that checked out, I feel like.
Yeah. Ointments and salves for that kind of thing.
Some Gold Bond medicated powder could
I love
fix
the
that
guy,
right
but I already spent my emotional baggage on it. Like, I got over it. And I'm ready for the A-Rod era.
He's Rodgers. On the cover of Madden, right?
Yeah.
So if he comes back, he's probably going to get killed. Or you know, like, doesn't he know? Get out while you can.
Oh, dear, dude.
It's possible.
If he came back and the curse kicked in, that would
he's laughing in the face of the curse.
That would be brutal.
Wisconsin would just, like, secede to Canada or something.
That would be brutal.
I don't know.
Would secede to Canada.
Yeah, they would just give up.
Wow. Interesting. All right.
Football is a religion, and Brett Favre is our pope.
You're retired Pope.
I retired
the Pope. College of Cardinals selected Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
There was smoke.
Anyway,
I was just trying to give you like some, you can have like, at least gonna have like the big celebration. It'll be bratwursts and cheese, right?
Oh yeah, we're going to the baseball game on the 5th.
Awesome.
Can you bring us
brother's
some,
bachelor party?
Can you bring us some curds back? Do they travel?
No, but I can probably find some.
Maybe some dry ice or something?
Yeah, maybe.
Fried cheese curds.
Not fried, fresh.
Or just regular fresh.
Yeah, we can get both.
I'd be all about the
They're
fries.
Good with garlic, too. Anyways.
You know, we were talking about this the other day. We're thinking about doing a food-related podcast.
Who was talking about this?
David and Ellis and I were talking about doing a food-related podcast.
Well, as podcast producer, this isn't the first time I'm hearing it. So we'll talk when I get back.
We thought it'd be maybe we'll have already done a pilot show by then.
All right.
I think it's premiering after the Needlepoint podcast.
Whatever, dude. You like you haven't been eating at a certain establishment.
Don't even bring it up.
Okay. Chef Leary, who runs Canteen over by Union Square, has a fantastic
Shut
new,
up!
Philip, what have you
fantastic
been eating?
New place. It's very close to your office.
I ate at that place. Yes. It was pretty good.
Yeah? It was fucking awesome, wasn't it?
I liked it.
It's the place.
What are you playing, Philip?
Okay. I brought this up last week, and you were displeased with me for having bought it, but I did get to try it out.
And you're now trying to, like, you know, convince yourself that it was worth
the
$63.59.
That's not even... I don't even care about that. I tried Operation Darkness. It's actually not that bad. It's not great. it's far from, it's like, it's not going to like convince any people who aren't strategy RPG fans to love the genre or anything.
Too Human, it's not that bad.
No. Too Human doesn't look like a PS2 game.
This does look like a PS2. This looks, yeah, this looks
not
like
even
a PS2
like a really
game.
Good PS2 game.
You're right. No, you're absolutely right. Like, graphically, it's not amazing. But like, gameplay wise, it's entertaining. I'm enjoying it.
Zombie and Nazis and werewolves.
Yeah, no.
If you're enjoying it, that's what's important.
Yeah,
don't worry what Shane
good
thinks.
For you,
I
Phil.
Agree.
Let me ask
good
you a quick
you.
Question, because I played this game at TGS a couple years ago.
Oh,
What is the conceit in the game that lets the Nazis die and then turn into zombies, and where do the werewolves figure into the whole thing?
Science. You know, actually, I'm not even far enough in the game to have gotten into the supernatural stuff. But I know there is supernatural stuff coming. I'm still like, I'm like 5 or 6 missions in, and they haven't brought in any supernatural stuff, so it's just the military stuff. It's totally possible the game will get much more stupid once that comes.
It sounds like there's potential for that.
You get characters. You get characters that get to turn into fucking werewolves.
I knew that. I did know
which
that.
Is awesome.
I mean, you know, there's like Final Fantasy Tactics A2 is out right now, and every moment you spend playing this shitty, low budget piece of crap SRPG, you could be playing something way
it's
better.
It's not that bad. I'm saying it's not amazing, but it's not awful.
But
A2 is for kids.
You can do better,
it's kids.
But it's not like a piece of crap.
You
don't
can
have
do better, man. You can do better.
Shane, A2 is for kids. It's a kid's
it's
game.
A little kiddie.
I got
kid
another
game.
Great one on my list.
Oh, good.
I'm playing Kung Fu Panda for review.
Yeah.
I hear it's not that
well,
bad.
Here's the thing. Is like here's during the third segment that people hear, you brought up something, Shane, about how when you were a kid, you used to play games and you weren't really concerned with reviews or anything. You would just play a game to, you know, you weren't like, I don't know if I want to spend money on this or whatever. And I sort of, that got me thinking about like when I was a kid growing up, I used to rent games from this. We had one rental shop in my town, and I would always just rent whatever they had. I didn't even care because whenever they got a new game, I would want to try it.
Right.
So I never, you know, I wasn't that critical about stuff. So I tried to go into this game with that point of view, like
not being very critical.
No, as a kid, you know, like how would I feel if I had gone and rented this game? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's not that bad. I mean, it's like a, there's a little bit of platforming, but it's mostly a brawler. And yeah, it's I feel like kids whose parents buy them this game are going to be happy with it, unlike a lot of kids games that come out these days. So you know, I'm actually really surprised they did an okay job with this.
That can be his new tag.
What?
It's not that bad. He could be Philip, it's not that bad Kohler.
Right.
The movie has been getting favorable reception, right?
I haven't seen the movie yet, and I want to see that also before
is
I...
Is Angelina Jolie in the game?
What? No,
she's
I don't
in the
think
film.
So. Really?
As
okay.
Like a frog or something, I don't even know. I didn't see it.
I don't think so. It does have voiceovers
she's
by...
She's a tiger.
I can't tell if it's actually Jack Black doing the voiceovers or if it's just
not.
a really bad...
It's a really... Well, bad slash good impersonator of Jack Black.
It sounds like totally like he's like, just bored reading the lines.
Yeah,
like,
it's like Jack Black kind of...
Like it just rolled out of bed and was yeah. Like, oh, whatever. But so the voice acting's a little bit awful. But other than that, it's a pretty fun game. I'm shockingly enjoying it. And then I've also been playing a ton of Ticket to Ride on Xbox
Ooh,
Live Arcade.
I wanted to play that this
nerd
too.
Game.
What is it with people in trains?
It's, like, it's a nerd game.
Yeah,
it's a board game. I mean, trains. It's not really about the trains. It's about the board game, and it's really really addictive and easy to just like. I the other night I was like, all right, I'm gonna try this out. I'm gonna try this out for like an hour before going to bed. I ended up playing it for like 3 hours and went to bed at like 4 a.m.
You know what you should spend your time on instead of these shitty games? It's Cold Sept Saga for the Xbox.
How can you like Cold Sept Saga but not like Ticket to Ride? It's a
board game. You would always go to Nerd Night at Chew's and play board games.
I'm holding
and cheat, but
I'm holding out hope for Illuminati because, like, Illuminati on any.
But if you like Cult Sept is a board game, this is a board game. You should like this as well. This has cards in it too.
It has like trains instead of ogres. Big difference.
Okay.
Which one's cooler?
Transit. Very cool.
The trains have very big. Boilers.
Andrew, you and I will play.
Yeah, definitely. So.
We'll talk about it. We're going to start a Ticket to Ride podcast.
That's right.
Nice.
That should be gripping. We can put it on right after the food podcast.
That's right.
24/7 programming, I guess.
Excellent.
The hobbyist hour.
Can you do the intro for us? That would be...
Welcome to the hobbyist hour with Garnet Lee.
Today on Delicious Dish. Anyway, yeah, so you've been playing
Ticket
to Ride.
Is that all you got?
Yeah, that's it. I'm
awesome.
Done.
Wow.
And there you have it. And
who's
it
next?
Counts.
Who's next?
I don't know. Who's going to...
I've gone already. Don't look at me. I've still been playing Guitar Hero.
I can follow on from Pwn for Panda. I played pretty much every version of the Wall-E game.
Wow.
I was talking with someone else who was playing that as well.
Yeah, I adore the film, and I would love for the game to be good. However, it's made by Heavy Iron Studios, who made every Pixar game for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And they're always kind of middling at best.
Well, I would say if you have kids and want to play it, don't play the Wii version, which is unusual, because the Wii controls are very, very difficult to get used to. The game actually gets really hard because there's two parts to it. There's the Wall-E parts and the Eve parts. The Eve parts are flying around and shooting at stuff, and the Wall-E parts are actually environment-based puzzles where you have to you make trash blocks, and it's like being in a giant game of Mousetrap, basically, where you have to set off these bits of machinery to open up the doors. But with the Wii controlling it, it's like the camera's all over the place and Wally's spinning around, and you control Eve by pointing her like little reticule thing, and she flies after it, and it just doesn't feel right. 360 version's great. The DS version, though, is like a much more scaled down sort of, it's like a 2.5D, but you can rotate it, and it's like, flicking switches, and so it's sort of more of a puzzle game than an adventure game. It's like Kung Fu Panda. It's like if you go into it with low expectations.
Not low, adjusted expectations.
Adjusted expectations. It's not as disappointing as games of their ilk have been.
It's cool that there are games coming out for kids that aren't awful. Totally awful.
They didn't just sort of phone it in and just slap some graphics that looked a bit like it. They did actually try and... Like I played the Kung Fu Panda game as well, and Wall-E, it does make use of a lot of the set pieces in the movie in a way that you do feel like you're kind of playing along with it, and that is all right. Cool. The other thing I played, I don't know if they came to demo it to you guys, Wizard 101.
They did come and demo it to us. I'm trying to think of who did our preview.
So this is by a number of people. The guy that... What was that Ubisoft... sort of gothic horror MMO. What was it called?
Shadowbane.
So the producer from Shadowbane is the producer on this.
Which that kind of like throws it into the notorious realm in the first place. But Tom Hall is on it.
And Tom Hall
is on it. And I like pretty much almost worship the ground that Tom Hall works on because, among other things, Anachronox, which is still at the tip top of my list of favorite games.
So if you imagine...
I love Anachronox. That's cool. I didn't know
World of Warcraft mixed with Harry Potter and The Matrix.
Huh. What's the Matrix angle?
So the thing that blew me away is the whole idea is that there's this wizard world and they've accidentally tapped into the internet from their side of the cosmos, and that they are actually speaking to you through this game that they've kind of discussed. So it's like the kind of the Matrix idea.
That's cool.
Is that it's not you pretending to be a wizard. It's you get sucked in, you actually control something in their world, but they found the internet through their magic or whatever, and they speak, and when he looks in his crystal ball, his crystal ball is actually showing him the internet. So that you're on the inside of it, kind of looking out. And then you kind of guide a wizard student around the world. But it's like all of the stuff that's really complicated that intimidate people about some MMOs, they've stripped down completely. It's very... I mean, it starts off, it's very fetch questy, but it's like it'll run on just about anything. It's all download. There's no package copy. The initial download is 2 minutes.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's smart.
And then it streams everything off the web. So it's not doing massive downloads. Every time you get to a sort of junction point, it goes and grabs the first bit of code for everywhere you could go from there. So it's pretty much seamless if you're playing on a decent connection.
That's really interesting.
Is it full retail price?
They haven't announced the pricing yet, but they said the subscription would be cheap enough that families would be able to do sort of group subscriptions for a sort of comparable rate.
Smart.
To a world. So mom and dad and brother and sister can play together for about what World of Warcraft costs.
How do the visuals look compared to WoW?
Similar. Well, but because they've tried to optimize it so it'll run on a laptop, and particularly like a second PC in the home. So the frame rate's really good. So it's very cartoony. So they got around the kind of detail issue by it's very sort of caricatures of wizards and big long beards. And there's lots of silly little creatures and stuff in it. But the other thing is the combat system is a card game, which is a fully functioning card game that you can play separate from the game product. So they're eventually going to roll out
Final Fantasy
physical card product as well that you'll be able to play offline.
Wow. Mm.
And the cards, the way the World of Warcraft cards feed back into the game a little bit?
Yeah.
They're taking that idea and it'll work both ways so that you'll be able to... There's things that you can do in the game that you'll win cards in the game, but then if you have the real physical cards, they'll have codes on them that will open up stuff in the game. So for what you kind of go in thinking, it's going to be a kid's very kiddie, sort of dumbed down experience. Like, you don't have the time for something like WoW. I can imagine a lot of people kind of being introduced to the idea of an MMO through this, because it's actually very full featured, and the combat system is like really good. It sort of it goes into a very Final Fantasy type arena that it renders in real time in the MMO environment, so the instances are visible to everybody else in the world. So you get sucked into this circle, and it's you, and there's points around the circle, and you lay your cards down. And someone can walk past, and if they see you're in a fight, they just step into the circle, and it sucks them into the combat.
Oh, wow. That's kind of... This sounds very
It's
cool,
very... I spent the whole time... I kind of went into it going... Because I originally wasn't supposed to be in the meeting, and things got juggled around. I'm like, all right, I'll sit through this damn thing, whatever. And they demoed it to me. I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah. I think it's definitely a smart premise, and it reminds me that EA has been like sitting on Harry Potter Online for 7 years, unable like to make a game. They, you know, they've announced like one or two, they never come to fruition.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it's like such a smart idea. Why don't they make it? You know,
I mean, it's like, I mean, they've been working. Yeah. The other interesting about this is it's in essentially public beta already. So they announced as the game was nearly finished. So there's going to be a very compressed kind of over the summer ironing out the kinks, and the game will be fully live kind of. Sounds like by September.
So right now, wow. Someone can go out and play this.
What you can do now is you go to wizard101.com and you sign up for the beta, but they're turning invites around in like a week.
There you go. So sounds worth checking out. How likely would it be for you to, you know, like project in the future? How likely would it be for the Davison family to play this game?
When my kids are older, I think they'd be into it, because it's like it's got a lot of rather than reading the words that you type in and then starring out the bad words, it has a pre-existing dictionary of words that it allows. So as you're typing, if you're typing in a word that it doesn't know, it just reads it out and doesn't let you type it. So as well as that, it also knows combinations of words. So if you try and kind of like
cheat the filter.
So the word in, the word my, that's the example they gave, the word in, the word my, and the word pants are all allowed individually, but if you string them together, it bans them.
In my pants. Wow.
I'd like that staff of yours in my pants.
I keep my wallet in my pants. That's a perfectly legitimate use.
But no, it wouldn't be allowed.
I don't know why I would say that in the game.
So I played some of that, and then I very, very briefly, before we came over here, because I knew that Dennis was on the show, I booted up the preview build of Two Human.
All right, so here we go. We're going to kick it off right here. This will be the Two Human hands-on impressions.
From the first 30 minutes.
The first 15 minutes is a cutscene.
Yeah, well, that's that. So the first 15 minutes of gameplay, I was somewhat disappointed.
I mean, were you prepared for the combat to be what it is, like the automatic
Had you played it before?
I'd seen it ages ago, and I'd read a lot of stuff about it, and I talked to Mark about it after he saw it that last time. So I was prepared for the...
sliding.
Yeah, the sliding, like, sword battling stuff. What I wasn't prepared for was how unpolished this preview build looks. I don't know if there's, like, an extra sort of pass of
Like, that intro hasn't really changed since I first saw it almost 2 years ago, and I always kind of assumed it would get another pass.
Yeah.
Finish.
I mean, I thought that very, very first scene where he's kind of walking through the woods looks really... It doesn't look very good at all.
Uh-huh.
And then a lot of the more armor the characters are wearing, the better they look. Let's put it that way.
Okay, yeah.
Anywhere where you can see, like human fleshy joints.
Seams.
And seams, and it doesn't look quite right. And it's like they just haven't... The art of the game hasn't really... I mean, the champion with the huge shoulder pads and everything looks like really badass, and he's quite imposing. But I think a lot of the other characters, there's some weird aesthetic choices in the game.
There's a little inconsistency sometimes, too. Yeah.
Like, there's some things you're like, oh, wow, that looks really cool, and it'll be doing some cool focus stuff. And then it'll cut to another scene, you're like, this doesn't even look like the same game.
Hmm.
But, I mean, that could be that it's a preview build, and I was also... I wasn't
paying close enough attention. Had you played it before, or was this
yes,
the first time?
Yes, just once, but a long, long time ago.
Okay, so, I mean, I think for me, one of the key things about the game is that the control scheme, although it's somewhat you know, drawing off of the twin stick shooter idea, it's unorthodox. It's a very,
unorthodox
control system.
Because every now and then you'll want to do something with the right stick for the camera, and you have to remember that it's one of the shoulder buttons to do it.
And right.
And then the other thing is the invisible walls are about 6 feet away from things that are actually in the environment. So there's a lot of trying to get around a corner and running on the spot. It's just like the environment's only interactive where it wants. I mean, a lot of games do this, but it's sparingly interactive and only where it wants you to be. And it tells you by locking onto it. If you have your gun drawn, it'll say, oh, you can shoot this statue, and it'll fall into three pieces. And
that kind of, I feel like that's a really like leftover thing from last generation that really good polished games this generation are getting rid of. So yeah. it's sort of depressing to hear that that's in there.
Well, there's the opening scene of the game, and you're wherever you are, you're supposed to be like the sort of gateway to Valhalla or whatever it is. And there's this huge Viking warrior statue lying on this like big crypt, and the first thing I wanted to do was jump on top of it to get a better look at it, and you can't because there's a giant invisible dome over it.
And that was the same problem, or one of the problems that a lot of people had with Ninja Gaiden 2, I remember.
Yeah,
it was the same way, like backgrounds and like stuff that looked really cool in the environment, and then there's just an invisible wall there.
It's not really there for you. Yep. It's like it's just sort of in the way, so you can't see around it.
It's like a green screen. It's in the back. You're not supposed.
You know
to
what I found myself thinking of while I was playing this game during the and I played about 2 hours into it. What was the name of that Koei thing that was like Dynasty Warriors in space? Was it Crimson Blood or? Remember that thing?
There are two of them. Crimson Sea.
Crimson Sea. Crimson Sea.
Which, and the, yeah, the sequel, and then like the sequel nobody Crimson wanted Sea. Ever. Yeah.
Right. So.
Yep, we did another one just in case you missed the first one.
Coming soon. Win back three.
Yeah. I was getting a ton of feel of Crimson Sea to this thing because it has that same sort of like swarms and swarms of monsters in this space setting with a weird art aesthetic to it, and this was where for me some of it started to be not as much fun as I'd hoped for, because since it is that sort of a Dynasty Warriors, Crimson Sea sort of thing, I wanted to do more with the control scheme, but there wasn't that much more to do with it. Now, there is some depth. Okay, so there is some depth with that you can double tap to, like, knock things up into the air. And eventually you get to where you can knock more than one thing into the air at once. And once you have them in the air, you can actually do, like, combo in-air combos between like shooting stuff and holding the stick towards something.
You guys are both playing the first hour of the game, and I was watching like David Ellos, who's beaten it, and like at the end of the game you unlock all these skill trees, all these new abilities, you have a lot more stuff at your disposal, but it takes a long time.
And it has a clob gun just like GoldenEye.
It does have a clob gun.
A big factor in how much you'll like this game is how much do you like going into the menu screens after almost every fight and tinkering around with different gear.
It's got a lot of PSO about it.
It does. There's a ton of gear, and there's a ton of, I mean, and I'll give them this, like, you're knocking the art a little bit for like the way the people look, but the gear.
I could live without Robo Boobs Girl at the beginning. Yeah. That was a weird aesthetic choice for the first 2 minutes.
But I'll take the other side, which is I think the gear, especially like the armors and the weapons, look really fucking cool. Like, I really like everything's individual, everything's unique and like really well designed, and I think it looks
Some of the character classes that aren't the champion actually look very cool. There's like the defender with the full face armor and everything, and then there's the bioengineer with the sort of sneak suit thing on. There's some really interesting design mixed in with the.
And Dennis has shown us some of like the later armor combinations that all those character classes get, and they're like, they'll look fucking cool, especially if you're playing multiplayer with friends. You're going to see a lot of really cool looking different characters, a lot of different cool looking weapons. I mean, if you're into that. And it's still very much a...
You mean playing multiplayer with a friend.
With friend, yeah. Not friends.
A friend.
With a friend, right? It's two-player. Okay, anyway. I mean, the point is, it's very much a Diablo or a Blizzard sort of thing where there's multiple classes of rares. You actually get, like, blueprints where you can build your own...
They're epic sets.
They're epic. There's tons of epic...
I was just going to ask, are there sets?
Like anything that Blizzard's done with epic sets, these guys have multiplied by... There's tons of different epic sets. There's, like, tons and tons of set armors that go together and make you look really
cool.
But
I do have to worry that they put a lot of effort into, like, pleasing the hardcore, pleasing the high-level players, but if it sounds like in the first hour they're going to lose a lot of people just because it's so different than what they expect, and I wonder if maybe they should have made the first hour more.
Well, it doesn't really. Like,
it doesn't grab
that
you.
First room. Yeah. It's like it's not even clear what you mean. Like there's a bunch of the guys that you arrive with milling around, and if you're sort of exploring and kind of lose track of what it has said to you when you walk through the door, it's not. Like a lot of games these days, they sort of steer you through the first few rooms. And this, it's like plops you down in the environment and it's like, okay, there you go. Good luck.
Well, and even weirder is that it has like a really uncommon mythos that it's drawing from, like this weird space Norse thing.
Space Vikings?
Yeah, space Vikings. And it's cyberspace, space cyber Vikings or whatever. And it doesn't ever, like...
Even the birds are robots.
It doesn't flesh that out very well for you. So you're kind of feeling like, wow, this is interesting. Or is it? Or I don't know. Well, I mean, how what is it? What's how going is, on here?
I know some people really don't care about this, but I know Dennis has been very adamant about story being important to the game, and it's a trilogy, and it's supposed to be very sweeping and epic. I mean, I know you guys haven't gotten too far yet, but how is the story?
Five books says we never see the third one.
Well, I think actually that the first act, which
I'll give you 50 on the second.
The first act, which you guys have played, has some interesting narrative stuff. Like you're playing a flashback, like you're playing it out of order. It's not a lot of games do that still.
Right.
You know, it has a unique flow to it.
I still though. The storytelling for me still needs some work. I mean, they have a couple of months. I think there's some things they could work on, especially in the cutscenes where, you know, it's very unclear at times who's doing the speaking. You hear guys that are like soldiers, I guess you're fighting with, talking or whatever, but you don't know. It's hard to figure out the context for them. Like, they don't ever bring in the camera to, like, focus on this is the guy who's talking or this is what's happening here.
Yeah, the cutscenes, and I think they have the disservice of coming out after Metal Gear Solid 4, which really did.
And also,
change.
I mean, honestly, I mean, it's always been very closely associated with Mass Effect because it was announced at the same time. And some of the aesthetics are similar. Some of the robotic creatures look a lot like the Geth.
And some of the bald space marines look like bald space
look like this bald space marines. And I think that the fact that the art isn't quite as good as Mass Effect, which came out nearly a year ago now.
Why do you say the art isn't as good?
I just think it doesn't look as consistent, you know?
It doesn't look as consistent, I agree. But I still think I'm going to stick to that, at least about the equipment. I think the equipment, which I think was one of the things they really focused on this game, looks really fucking cool.
Yeah.
I like that part. The other part for me is, at least in these first levels, and maybe it's different later, the first levels, they're pretty barren. There's not a lot of stuff in them. It's just like a corridor and...
You mean like backgrounds and stuff?
Or like furnishing inside the level. I mean, it's just like you're in
hallways?
These long, big hallways, sometimes a little broader, or there's there's like a courtyard that you open into and there's just floor and ceiling and
I want it to be good, and I want the game to kind of win me over as I play through it because I like what it's drawing from. But
but
I also think is that the number of people that feel that way about games like this, there's not millions of people that feel that way. There are hundreds of thousands of people that feel that way. So I don't think it's going to be a multi-million selling mega hit. I think it like PSO, there'll be a few hundred thousand people that play it and love it. And play co-op a lot, and like there'll be very vibrant communities of people that love it, and then there'll be the people that Dennis hates sort of standing around the outside pointing and laughing.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty fair...
Which is a real shame that I think, you know, games industry should be able to support things that have small, very passionate communities around them. But the thing, I mean, I read a bunch of the coverage this week about it, and I think one of the consistent things that came up a lot is you would not know that this game had been on the boil for 10 years.
Well, I mean, that's a bit unfair, though, because it hasn't... It's been the some of the ideas and the stories and that stuff has been on the boil, but this build especially
it's
has not been on the boil.
Consistently changing over those 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, the first screenshots compared to what we have now.
I mean, not just the art, but I just think the whole sort of...
I still think for console players, the first pickup is they're gonna look at it. Everyone has played or seen a game along the lines of like Dynasty Warriors. They're gonna get involved in that mass combat, and then they're just gonna realize, well, all I do is push the stick at something and hold it that direction to fight it. And they're gonna want to. They're gonna like if they play many games.
And the Berserker is all that, right? It's all close. It's all the right stick if you play that character. At least
everybody has guns. Well, it's just a matter of how well they do.
But
with guns.
Yeah, you're talking about the actual like melee combos with the right stick, and that is more of the Berserker.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I think the game is gonna. It's. I want to go back and, you know, I play for a few hours and then maybe go back and try another class to see if it really does.
Yeah, I'd recommend co-op. I mean, I can already tell that, like, I think most people are going to have more fun in co-op.
Co-op's going to be a lot more fun because you can branch out and play the different characters that support one another.
And also, like, something that's mundane is a lot more fun with somebody else. It's true. I mean, dungeon hack games in general.
Just gathering the loot and showing it off is going to be a ton more fun with other people.
The quest for junk is only so much fun by yourself.
All right,
I mean, everyone loved Diablo, but I mean, it was just, you know, hitting things and picking the junk they dropped up, and like, you know, loved it. So,
and there really was. Well, so here's the difference. I thought about the Diablo comparison, and there was nothing more in the basic combat in Diablo was you pressed and held the button on something, right? But The difference was you had all these different skills that would give you, like, go watch the Diablo 3, which we're talking about Diablo 3, but go watch the Diablo 3 videos where you see the barbarian immediately reminds you, oh, that's right, you had stuff like Whirlwind, or you had all these abilities and skills that you were triggering.
You have crazy abilities into human. Like, if you watch the one-up show, he shows off some of the wild ones. You can throw your, enchant your weapons, it goes attacks enemies. You can put different abilities on your weapon. And
okay, so as I get further in the game, I'm going to get stuff like that?
You can have a gun where you shoot someone, and that gun makes that person go crazy and shoot his friends.
Like, okay, that's going to make a big improvement, because I wanted some of that stuff.
But it's not there at the beginning. It's another not. Thing is you have to put time in to get those things.
Those things aren't there at the beginning of Diablo either, though, so that's fair.
Okay. Well, I'm sufficiently hooked to...
I think the really cool thing is that we have this like build that you can play start to finish, so we can screw around with it some more and play some more characters, and we can come back to it and talk about some more.
Yeah.
All right. Did you play anything else?
I got some stuff. The only other thing, every moment that I... I'm doing nothing. I now have my DS in my hand and playing Space Invaders Extreme.
Really?
Yeah. Late to the party. We've been talking about that.
I know.
I haven't touched it. I didn't see it. Yeah, really fun.
Awesome, yeah.
I might have to go get it.
It's fantastic.
It's Space Invaders with a Lumines aesthetic. I mean, basically.
Yeah, I'd probably love it. I should order that off Amazon.
I enjoy it. It's quite good.
Yeah.
All right, so
you played the PSP version, right?
I played them both. I prefer the DS version if you have a paddle controller, but if you don't, I think the PSP one's slightly better.
Really?
If you have is that little
the
thing?
Import only.
Yeah, that looked cool, like Jeremy had.
Oh.
How does that work?
You attach it to the bottom of your DS, and it's a really nice old-fashioned Pong paddle, you know?
Oh, wow. It goes into the old Game Boy cartridge slot.
Yeah.
People are doing a lot with that lately.
It also works for Arkanoid. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Damn.
So just as the speculation is that they're going to take that off the next DS, suddenly everyone's building accessories that use it.
Well, Japanese domestic, not for North America or whatever. All right, so last week we didn't talk about Quantum of Solace because, basically, I wasn't sure what the embargo was at the time, and rather than make Andrew do a bunch of editing, I was just like,
dropped some really obvious hints.
I know. Well, and obviously it was
fine.
Before
you go into the game, has everyone seen the movie trailer? Which looks fucking awesome.
Shit, dude. My God. The new trailer looks so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
How long do we have? About 30 seconds.
Well, that's not very long, is it?
And who's the chick? She Russian? Who is she?
Who cares?
I mean, she's hot. Yeah, but who is she?
All right, so as part of that whole deal where we got to see World at War, we went down and saw Quantum of Solace, which is the other Treyarch project, which is the other Call of Duty 4 project. And I'll say it right now. I said it like to a couple of people at Activision. I am 2 or 3 times more excited about Quantum of Solace than I am for Call of Duty World at War.
Why?
Because, I don't know. I mean, first of all, maybe it's like wild hope that they could get the GoldenEye thing right, because I loved GoldenEye.
Don't you think the GoldenEye Je ne sais quoi is like a nostalgic mythical thing that doesn't really exist?
Yeah, no, I kind of feel like
I kind of feel that way. I mean, I love GoldenEye.
Screw
GoldenEye,
you guys!
But like, you know, Halo, Call of Duty, those things are better than GoldenEye. I mean,
GoldenEye was unique because no one had done that on a console with a controller before.
Oh, but it was more than that. It was James Bond.
They nailed the movie.
If you're talking about how they followed the plot of the film specifically,
I'm talking about like the whole package. They nailed the movie. They made James Bond a badass. It was a cool shooter, but you still felt like James Bond. You felt like James Bond played by Pierce Brosnan, which we can argue about whether or not that was a good Bond or not. But you really like the whole experience really worked. And then it also had the multiplayer component, which was really fun. I mean, I don't know how many of you guys did it. We cut out like cardboard boxes and made like you know squares that would go over the screen so you could divide the 4 panels so you couldn't see what the other person was doing. Did you do that?
No.
Anybody ever do that?
No.
Oh come on! I was the only guy. God. All right, we did. We didn't really do that. I was joking.
Yeah, you guys need to chill
out. I was totally joking.
Wow.
I mean, so the thing for me is that they seem to be really, really engaged in this idea of making a really badass Bond film movie. And I like that idea because I really did like GoldenEye. They have a great engine. So, I mean, you know you're fine with Call of Duty 4. And, like, doing indoor environments, it's like they're just able to take the detail slider and crank it all the way up.
I don't know if they showed you, but the Daniel Craig Bond, there's a lot of the sort of parkour type run, you know, jumping around the environment. Have they done a sort of Mirror's Edge kind of approach to the environment?
No, they have not.
Manipulation?
It doesn't seem like they've done a Mirror's Edge sort of thing. What they have done to bring, because they didn't want it to just be a first-person shooter. They brought in sort of that Rainbow Six Vegas in-cover third-person cam. So when you go into any situation where you're in cover, the camera like slowly pans back, and then you can see, you know, your situation third-person style.
Is the cover system, what is it like?
It looks basically like Rainbow Six Vegas. I mean, they were playing the demo, so I can't tell you how easy it is to go in and out of. I mean, they used some big considerations. Their Daniel Craig model is fucking jaw-dropping. It is by far the most amazing.
Garnet said he was so hot.
He is.
He's so chiseled. He sort of looks like a computer game character.
Yeah, he does look like a game. He does. And he has really short hair, so it's easy to do the hair or whatever.
Do you fire in third person? Like, what happens in what parts of the game? Just cover. That's it.
Just cover. But you can use that a lot. So they're not doing any of the stuff that EA tried in some of its games where you had Bond moments or whatever, you know. Like, their idea of, like, how to have Bond moments is to have them just happen in the game however you decide to do them. So, you know, like, they showed an area where they were infiltrating the penthouse of the Casino Royale. And he was able to do, and this reminded me of, like, maybe this is also part that reminded me of GoldenEye. Like, there were parts of GoldenEye where you didn't play it thinking you're playing a sneaking game, but like you were trying to be quiet and stay out of guards' ways. But you knew you're going to stay out of the guards' ways to like to a point, but then you were going to just like unload and it was going to go holy fucking crazy. And that was the way they played this.
I always remember that one where you're climbing through the air conditioning vent, you drop down into the bathroom. There was a guy in there. You had to take him out and then
shot his hat off. Yeah, and you shot him in the head.
Or when you're in the control room, right? And you're like trying to stay out of sight, but then you knew as soon as the bullets start flying, it's going to become like just a crazy shooter. And it sort of had that same feel. It's like he's sneaking around, he takes out a couple of guys, he hides the bodies or whatever, and then he gets to a point where he's like, well, there's three guys in this room and two guys in this room, and he's got to get over to this room. He's like, ah, fuck it. And he runs in another room, jumps down behind a couch, and just like, you know, pulls up over the top and unloads on him with an MP5. And that was cool. And because it's Call of Duty 4, the engine modeling, you know, the engine for the guns is very militarily accurate. You know, like if you're handling a PPK, you're handling a PPK. If you're handling an MP5, you're handling an MP5. It's not slopped.
I guess I'm really surprised when you told me that there are no vehicular bits, because it seems like obvious that they would try that, given that so many other people who've gotten the Bond license have tried to fit other kinds of gameplay in there, and that they decided to stick with a straight shooter.
I mean, EA, there was always the hit, and now you're playing the bit that Black Box built.
Right.
Yeah.
So some of the things that Mark Lamia, who's the head of the studio down there, talked about to me was like, you know, we didn't do a vehicle section for two reasons. He's like, number one, if we don't get the shooting part right, no amount of car driving crap is going to ever redeem the game. So we wanted to, you know, not put any time into that. And if we were going to build something into the Call of Duty 4 engine, we were going to build the third person cover system into it, and then we were going to like tweak up the detail that we could do on indoor environments and spend all of our effort on making that
Activision
part right.
Activision owns Bizarre now. Well, they just could have taken the PGR model for an Aston Martin and done that in one.
What he didn't tell you is I saw next year's, you know, Activision sheet, and they have 007 Racing 2 and Guitar Hero Bond Theme Edition.
They
awesome. Duran Duran.
Every Bond song ever. Fantastic.
Yes. He said that they played with it for a while during prototype phasing, and that it wasn't adding that much to what they were getting out of the experience because face it, I mean, the Daniel Craig Bond is a physical badass. They're like, this dude's a badass. He's super violent. He works perfect in a first-person shooter. And
this Bond, let's face it, so far, every time he's gotten into a really cool car, he's crashed
fucking
it.
Fucking ruined it, right? He trashed it and wound up getting tortured. So,
did they show any like Call of Duty like scripted on-rail stuff?
Not really.
They could get around that, the car chasing stuff with that method.
They really didn't show a lot of scripted part. I mean, a lot of what they were showing was
leaning
really
out of a vehicle or
holding onto a helicopter or something like that.
They showed some parts where, like, you know, for instance, he's like sneaking around the penthouse.
Snaking. Slip there.
Yeah, little Freudian slip. He was sneaking around this penthouse, and like, you know, he'd go out and he'd like, you know, shimmy along a ledge outside the hotel, and like the camera would pull like really far back for they have a really dramatic camera angle and stuff like that. But they didn't really show a lot of
I bet there's some of that in there.
There could be. I mean, it wouldn't be out of question, right? So they have both movies in the game. Starts in Casino.
I think that's a really, really awesome idea.
Very smart.
I was talking with you about it earlier. It's just, it gives them so much more to work with for the game, where they don't have to like throw stuff into the new movie that doesn't make sense.
Right. So then this is the first time, I didn't realize it, but this is the first time there's ever been a true sequel to a Bond movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've always been.
There have been some connections or whatever, but like, evidently, this movie like picks up in the speedboat.
There's three with like, him that will follow on from each other. It's a trilogy.
Oh, it's a trilogy. I thought it was just a two-parter.
Yeah.
All right. So maybe who knows? But anyway, they have that. They have a number of deleted scenes that they're going to have through both of the movies, so they're able to tell more of the story. They'll be able to flesh things out better. No, it doesn't have the poker or the. Was it poker?
Baccarat.
Doesn't have the Baccarat
game. They made
game.
A poker in America. It was Baccarat in the book. Do they have Craig's voice?
Yes, they have all of the voices, and evidently Daniel Craig is a huge Xbox fan. They took a build over to show him a few weeks ago, and like he kept their dev kit in his trailer and was like, "You guys leave, I'm keeping this." So he's totally on board for doing it. All of them are doing the voiceovers.
You are officially stoked for this
game. I am kind of officially stoked for this game.
Wow.
Good.
I like Bond. I like the Call of Duty 4 engine. The indoor environments look really, really good. Like Call of Duty 4 just doing indoor environments is awesome. And there's multiplayer and they didn't even show that. I mean, who knows what multiplayer could be.
Nice.
Kind of pumped. And I'm also pumped. I'm pumped for the other games that I've been playing as well. Mainly Pixel Junk Eden, which is...
You know, I keep walking past people playing. I'm like, this game looks so crazy. I'm excited. Dude. It's crazy.
I've been watching Nick play it all week, and I can't... like, every time... I've probably spent 20 or 30 minutes watching him total, and I can't understand what's going on, but I can't wait to try it out.
Yeah, same here.
It is fully sublime, dude. It might be like an early candidate for me for Game of the Year, simply because playing this game, when I've been playing it, it keeps me challenged and interested in playing it. But instead of like getting like white knuckled and upset and irritated with it, it's like I just totally like I'm relaxed.
It's pretty chill. Have you tried the co-op? Because I was watching. Nick and Anthony were playing. That looked really fun co-op.
What kind of game is it?
Okay, so
it's a physics.
That's a tough question.
Physics based puzzle platformer.
Let me try and explain with music. The music's a huge part because Bion from Kyoto.
Wait, are you going to try and explain with music? Like sing it?
No, don't.
Awesome.
That would be great.
Get David Ellis dance. Back in here.
Interpretive dance now.
So the idea is that you're building these abstract, or you're growing these abstract gardens, and you're playing this little thing called a grimp, and it's called a grimp because it can grip and it can jump. And it's like this little critter inside the garden, and it can jump around the stems of all these abstract plants. Okay, and you can have it just jump, and if it jumps, it'll automatically land and stick on another plant. You can also hold down the button when it jumps. It'll have like a little bungee cord that attaches where it jumped from. And then you can spin in a circle around that. Now, as you're spinning, you're looking at me like I'm nuts. You're looking at me like...
And you're also missing the background is like a psychedelic morass as if someone put some acid in your Coke.
Okay. Right. Yeah. And the music starts off like... And it starts off in layers of music. So like right, you know, you start off, you just have like the bass line. And so you're like spinning around in a circle. You hit the pollen... spores, which like distributes pollen in the world, and then the pollen like goes and fills up these little hollow seed circles. And once the hollow seed circles are completely full, if you jump into them, then they sprout a new plant that grows higher up into the screen, allowing you to traverse through the abstract garden. And while you're traversing through the abstract
Andrew's
garden...
Andrew's raising his hand.
I just suggest that John go to gamevideos.com, yeah. Part of the 1UP Network, and watch a video of...
That sounds like it's
even
much
that
better.
Is, it's
the well combine just, them watch them while listening right. to Garnet's explanation.
So you now you're traversing through the garden by jumping or by swinging around in circles and letting go, right? And it has momentum, but while you're in the air you can also tweak your trajectory with the sticks, and you're trying to find these things. There's five of them in each level called spectras, and when you hit the spectra it causes the color scheme in the level to change, and it adds like the next layer of the music to the music for that level. And it also takes the spectra back to the menu screen, which is in itself an abstract garden.
Am I getting too much information?
It sounds like a very peaceful, non-confrontational version of Rez.
It is.
Yeah, it's a little
And
Rez.
You can play with up to two other people. You can play with three people. And you can be all like swinging
what
around the garden.
What blows me about Pixel Junk is our first exposure to Pixel Junk was that awful slot racing game that they had. Yeah. And they've evolved into this.
I know.
The thing that I find really fascinating is both Pixel Junk Racers and their other game, Pixel Junk Monsters, were like, they were... Like, Pixel Junk Monsters was good, but it was also taking an idea that had already been done before and just kind of, like, putting it onto the console of, like, the tower defense game. Mm-hmm. But this is just, like, nothing else I've ever seen.
So let's give credit
out there.
So let's give credit where credit. This is Q Games over in Japan with Dylan Cuthbert on the production side, and it's freaking fantastic.
Oh, it is Q?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not that Q. It's not Q Entertainment.
It's different Q. It's the other Q.
But I do wonder if people will get it without playing it. Like, it's pretty baffling. You know,
I don't care. Be excited. Go get it.
They should do a demo, I think.
There should be a demo. That's a good point. There should be a demo because it is hard to grasp.
It's hard to even explain. Yeah.
But it's so awesome. Go watch the video because it's...
And apparently, it's also... If you do want to get everything in the game, apparently it's also very long. Nick was saying that it was taking him a long time to get stuff.
Yeah, so there's... Yeah, there's...
There's just a lot to collect.
There's 10 gardens and 5 spectres in each, so that's 50 spectra. And, like, I was watching one where Nick was playing later on in the game where there was, like, wind blowing through the environment.
How much
so,
is it? Like $7?
I think it would be, like... I don't know. What would Pixel Junk
I think Pixel Junk Monsters was released for like 8 or 10.
8 or 10? Yeah. It also has the crazy YouTube thing, which is it's the first game to have that. You can make a video of what you've done and in the game upload it to YouTube from the game.
From the game.
From That's the game. Awesome.
While you're sitting there playing, yeah. like, you know, circling around, listening to the music, jamming. Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
Pretty awesome.
Pixel Junk Eden. Totally fucking in love with that game.
Cool. All right.
So, there you go.
Who didn't go? Shane.
I've been really busy, but I have been playing two games. Most of my free time has been spent with Soul Calibur 4. We finally got the whole game with all the characters, because before they gave us a shitty build with four characters.
I was playing as Kratos.
We haven't found him quite yet. No, I'm not sure where that info came from, but
okay.
Playing with Yoda, not as terrible as I was expecting.
Like, oh, really?
When I first played with him a few months ago, I hated him, but he's actually a little overpowered.
Dude,
so,
really? Zhang Shuo totally got nerfed. I'm pissed.
Well, most of the good characters got nerfed. Like,
sucks.
Ivy totally changed. Like, Sophia totally nerfed.
Oh, really?
X is nerfed. Yeah, like...
Bummer.
I heard...
Mitsurugi, did they nerf him?
No, he's fine.
No, okay. Mitsurugi's still
same
a
badass. Same as he always was.
Awesome.
I heard Milky screaming a lot this week, and also he sent out a couple angry emails. Yeah. Are there some pretty unbalanced characters in the game?
Astaroth, as always, very strong. Actually, one of the most unbalanced characters is the last boss. He is ridiculous.
How about my boy Voldo?
They gave him a lot of new stuff. He's got some really new disturbing crab crawling
Excellent.
Stuff.
Is he really your boy?
Yeah, I love Voldo.
I mean, my overall...
Haven't you ever seen his demon cod piece?
Yeah. My overall impression is, you know, I'm happy.
Not since he stopped working here.
I used to invite him into my office every week to admire it. Continue. I'm very interested.
We call it the one up yours pre-show meeting.
That's right. So you went in to polish that for him, put a little shine on there.
Yeah.
The overall speed is a little less than Soul Calibur 3, but that's okay. It takes you a minute to like, okay, everyone's a little slower.
Yeah.
Like I like what they've done. The Guardian Packs, there's some small changes to that are good. The fucking finishers, the critical finishes, the fatalities, they don't really break the game because the what you have to do to get in the ability, you know, to set it up is pretty extreme. And
you would have to be playing someone who is extremely defensive.
Right. Yeah, like unless someone blocks all the time, you're probably not going to be able to even use it. So.
Yeah, I mean, I was worried about it, but now that I've played even just a few games and watched a lot more, it doesn't seem to really factor into the game
and
that
how
much.
How brutal are they? I mean, is it...
They kill you in one hit.
But I mean, are they sort of brutal? Or
no,
is
no,
it
they're,
just a...
they're flashy and funny and crazy. Okay. Crazy. There's not, you know, it's not gory. It's Soul Calibur.
So it's like some of the crazier moves that are sort of where you sort of set off an animation that lasts a while.
Well,
type move.
That's kind of that's kind of the problem. Is when it happens, it isn't even really happening in game. It kind of like you put your controller down and it's showing you, you know, an in-game movie of it. Basically,
okay. Yeah, it's basically you're punishing the other person for blocking and blocking.
Dragon Ball Z Burst Limit does that a lot.
Yeah,
where you're sort of setting off a bunch of scenes and just watching.
I'm a little disappointed with the graphics. Overall, like it doesn't. Never when I'm playing the game am I like, wow, this looks really good. I'm like, oh, this looks fine.
I overheard you complaining about the backgrounds.
Yeah, they're inconsistent. Some of them, a few of them do look really good, but in general, they just kind of look like high res things that could have existed on Xbox One and PS3, and PS2.
And they're not all that next gen.
No. But the characters look really good.
And how does the
Definitely.
How does the Darth Vader character move? Is he like, because I mean,
oh,
in the movies,
he's really good actually.
Because like, he was, every time you saw him fight, he was a very sort of. Slow, powerful, ponderous, sort
he
of
moves
more,
like that,
more like a heavy character in Soul Calibur.
He is a heavy, slow, strong character. He has projectiles. He has cool force moves.
Even his run is not super fast.
No, actually, the best guest character is the apprentice, the guy from, what's the new Star Wars
Force
game?
Unleashed.
Force Unleashed. He's awesome because like his style looks really great. His force moves, he has force lightning. He can throw his lightsaber.
Oh, nice.
He's got lots of really cool moves.
Remember Link?
Well, but the other big disappointment is the other guest characters, like you might have seen them, like Scheherazade and Englefear, all these like characters made by these famous anime and manga designers, they're just clones of other characters. They don't
really.
They have no unique moves, they're just clones.
Huh.
So that's kind of a
I hadn't really looked at those. I know that Ryan had everything.
Well,
open.
So realistically, there are only two new actual Soul Calibur world characters, which are Hild, who you've seen. She's a female knight. She's excellent. She's really deep, super complex, great character.
Does it still have the character creator?
It does. So you can play with that all you want.
So can you take the apprentice's moveset and completely custom skin it?
We haven't unlocked like the soul of the apprentice yet, but we're hoping to because we want to make like characters based on him.
Right.
So you should be able to.
Great.
And the other disappointing thing is our build has no online, so I can't talk
Besides
about it.
Hild, who's the other?
New character, Algol, the last boss, who's ridiculous.
He's the one that had like the little vortex underneath his feet, and like floats above the ground, and
he like sits in a chair. Like he throws 20 fireballs.
Yeah, that was fucking nuts. Dude, I was watching. I was watching one of the
guys. Sean Elliott is convinced that he's not overpowered. Sean Elliott says he's actually fair.
Sounds like the way some of the Tekken and Link bosses got, where it was just like, come on, he takes up the whole screen. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah, he sits in a giant throne and floats around. It's ridiculous.
Okay,
but I'm pleased, and this whole weekend is going to be one giant 4th of July Soul Calibur festival. As I relearn Ivy, because they totally gimped her and fucked her up.
Awesome.
The other game is Nintendo's upcoming Wario Land Shake Dimension, which I've been kind of a hater of, because based on just screenshots, everyone was like, this game looks fantastic. I'm like, for a Super Nintendo game. No. As in, like, now that we actually have it, I'm going to take that back and say it looks good for a GameCube game, and
excellent. It's a step up.
Fantastic.
Two steps up.
But Wario, his sprite is super well animated. It's like among the best animated sprites I've ever seen, so I got to give it up for that. And it is really just a Wario Land game. Like, you have the dash. It's just like the classic GBC.
Yeah, Jeremy's been playing it, and I asked him what he thought of it, and he's like, basically, it's Wario Land 4. And that's awesome.
Yeah. So if you're like a Wario Land fan, you'll be right at home here. And
is this coming out so good. Retail?
Yeah.
Awesome. Fantastic.
It's a full price game, which we'll see about
September, I think it's out.
August?
Right?
Maybe. August.
Because there isn't a first party Nintendo game till August 25th.
That must be it then.
I'm excited that I have a Wii game to look forward to for fall.
The other neat thing, it has these really long, actually, like anime cutscenes that are unskippable, but they're...
Are they funny?
They're funny, and they're done by like this famous animator from the 70s, and they look like 70s anime, which to me is like quirky and fun and cool, and it reminds me of like Lupin. And yeah, they're actually funny. So I, as much as I wanted to hate this game, I kind of like it.
Have you played Sluggers yet?
No, I haven't played that.
Because I think that's coming out before Wario.
Oh, maybe Wario is September, but okay. You know. The other thing that sucks about it, though, it's 4x3 with like weird...
Like Mario Party with the crazy fucking wallpaper.
Yeah, it has
side.
Like wallpaper on the sides.
Lame.
Anyway.
That is
isn't that weird?
Really lame. Yeah.
But the game is fun.
All right.
So, there you go.
All right. So, wow, that was a rousing edition of what you've been playing. We've been playing all kinds of shit.
Who knows?
It's a good summer. Where the hell is that fucking drought?
I don't know, dude. I heard about it on a radio show. These guys are fucked up.
Guys are a bunch of fucking tools. All right, when you stick around, we will be back in just a moment with the news, and let me see what Philip has collected for us. Diablo 3, screw that. Rock Band 2, I don't know.
Chrono Trigger.
Chrono Trigger. Yeah, all right, we can do that. All right, stick around. We'll be right back with the news. Back and ready to do the news, which now should we just go ahead and tell them, because I guess it's kind of out there. We have a new news team.
Oh yeah,
that's right.
Sucks to be you.
Sucks to be me, because
what is that? You don't like working with me?
That Philip kid, what a brown noser.
I know, seriously. Oh my god. So yeah, we've been shuffling things around the one up towers, and I am moving over to head up our news department.
You'll like it. It's good people.
Garnet's getting his frequent job card punched.
I know, it's Friday, so it must be time for Garnet to have a new job.
So wait, what is your new title now? Because I can't remember. It was like 5 words.
Senior executive editor of video games.
Okay.
He takes care of stuff.
Nice.
You don't sound sure.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm just trying to...
What does that mean, Shane?
I'm not sure.
To be determined.
John, you have to understand, I'm just trying to solve one up before I leave. It's very important.
You're going
to
do one of everything.
I have to solve this game tape.
When do you get to
conquer it?
Do you get to be community manager at some point as well?
No, I don't have
Garnet
to
is winning the one-up stamp rally. You get a stamp for every position you're in.
Oh, nice.
See? There you go. So, I'm going to trade them all in for something big.
Excellent.
Going for the grand prize.
Okay, we do have news prepared this week that I got ready for us.
Two pages of headlines.
Is it really two
pages? On a little crib sheet?
I just gave you my list, and Andrew gave you yours.
They're in different fonts.
Oh.
Basically, that's
I'm using the correct official one of yours font.
My bad.
Berated Philip.
It's one list twice, then.
That's right. We're going to go over the stories twice.
I prefer the Courier New to the Times New Roman.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into it. We already knew it was coming last week. I mean, well, we didn't know, but we were pretty sure. And sure enough, Diablo 3 did get officially announced at the Blizzard Worldwide Invitational. They had a big thing. They showed the first trailer and everything. It's all up on Game Videos. We have like five or six different stories that you can read on it.
I so wet myself. I'm so freaking dying for that game now.
Were you awake?
No, I wasn't awake.
It was actually kind of funny because I was there, and then I realized a couple of my freelancers stayed up and waited for the announcement as well. And then Sam Kennedy and Milky were both awake waiting too, and they're like, "I can't go to bed. I need to see if it's Diablo 3."
I'm curious. Is everybody here a Diablo person? I get the feeling you are.
I'm not. Mm-hmm. I've never played.
I like you Diablo.
Are. I played through both of them. Yeah.
So Skip, as not a Diablo person, when you saw this, I mean, I could understand. Like, I know everyone loves Blizzard. I know everybody loves Diablo. But like, I'm like, really? You're like, it looks good, but
I thought it looks good.
It's all right.
I appreciate everyone's love for it, and I'm interested in trying it myself. I might like find track down Diablo 2 and play that for a while because I've always been told.
I guess there's starting to be some. Aren't they playing a little bit safe?
Yeah, I kind of. I expected it
commentary
to look a little different than it does.
Well, let's get into that a little. They, along with announcing the game and showing the trailer, they also did a huge 20-minute long gameplay demo, which was unexpected. They showed off the Barbarian, and they said their new philosophy for Diablo 3 is no such thing as too much power. So you're going to get, clearly you're going to get extremely powerful in the game.
You have to say that, no such thing is too much power.
That's right. And then
hit people so hard that they disappear and turn up later in the game because you hit
them. Yeah, that's right.
You hit them in time.
Yeah.
A time punch.
Time punch.
That's correct.
I'll deal with you later.
Level 3.
As Shane was saying, rather than make the graphics really amazing or realistic, they're sort of taking the same route they did with StarCraft 2, where it's definitely an upgrade from Diablo 2. Actually, I think if you go back to Diablo 2, it's a pretty major upgrade from
Diablo
upgrade
2
from that
was
game.
Like 10 years ago.
Exactly. But
it's a major upgrade.
So is StarCraft.
It's the same engine. But people are still really excited. They act like it's the best game ever. You'd be surprised.
But it's still not amazing. It's still isometric view and stylized. A lot of people, there were some complaints on the forums that it's looking a little bit too much like World of Warcraft. I'm curious what you guys think of that.
There's a petition.
There's a friggin' petition.
Yeah, we did a story on
that.
This
it looks
that people
too
can check
cute
out.
And fruity, and it's not gothic enough.
Oh, fuck off.
All right,
some of the stuff in the petition was, the forum for that petition was fantastic. I highly recommend it. It's like 250 pages, but go read all of them. People put up like screenshots
can you
of like, this is what I think the game
for
should. No, I can't. One guy said that it should look like Gears of War because that's cool.
Oh yeah, well argued.
Yes.
But me, guy who doesn't know Diablo, I look at the screens, I look at the video, I'm like, yeah, I kind of would like it to be a little darker and grittier. And I know that sounds cheesy, but it's kind of colorful and friendly and inviting. Yeah.
I don't know.
It
looks awesome. My God, I'm so excited for it.
They're definitely going more colorful than the previous game. And that's, I think, why people are saying a little bit.
Well, by the way, quick
Diablo,
aside.
Diablo 2 was black and red, and the only red was you, right?
Yeah, well, Sandy, there was the jungle. There was the jungles, right? There's a whole jungle level.
You're about to go through the levels, and you're about to make it sound lame, so don't.
Right.
Because if you go, there's the jungle level, there's hell, but there's the stuff with the lava, and you're like, oh, wait.
Sand?
There's the sand and
deserts?
The snow as well.
Okay, yes.
I'm curious. Did Blizzard say part of it was because they wanted a lot of people to be able to run it? They wanted to run on not the highest end machines.
I think that's always a concern with Blizzard games. I don't know that they came out directly and said that.
You remember that it's going to be on the Mac as well, so that it has to be dumbed down a little bit.
Actually, that is one of the they do actually want to have a base that will run this. Yeah. It does not need a supercomputer. That is one of
It'll apparently run on a current MacBook or something, which has a pretty decent graphics card in it.
It does.
Also, you may recall from last week's one of yours where Garnet Lee was assured that this was coming to consoles as well.
It's still going to come to consoles.
Really?
I'm not going to change my mind about
that. They've been fairly adamant no, it isn't.
We have some more stuff
no,
on that in a second.
Isn't.
We have some more stuff on that in a second.
In fact, I think he actually said, no, it isn't.
Garnet Lee, host of What Up Yours. No, you're wrong.
Hold on. We have some more stuff on this in a second. But in addition to the Barbarian, they showed off a new class, the Witch Doctor, which is basically, looks a little bit like Necromancer. You're kind of like able to summon pets and stuff.
Right.
They said there's going to be three more character classes in addition to that. So only five character classes. It's a little surprising.
How many were in Diablo 2?
Five.
But then they added more with the expansion, right? I don't know.
So
I kind
they'll
of expected
have an
ex- there.
They'll, wait a minute. There'll be an expansion pack for Diablo 3?
I kind of expected
Breaking
there to
news.
Be more right from the start, but whatever. Whole deal. It's going to be set 20 years after the last game, if you care about the story at all.
And did you see sales of Diablo 2 Battle Chest went through the roof again? Like, everyone was like,
of course.
I remember.
In addition to, they are going to stick with randomly generated environments. But in addition to that, they're also going to have random scripted events, which is interesting. So, like, they're going to have, like, little scripted adventures that can happen just at any point in the environment. We have interviews up with designer Leonard Boyarski and Blizzard Executive Vice President Rob Pardo on 1UP, so go check them out. And, of course, a bunch of other people got interviews, so some other news came out from Blizzard, including Microsoft should do more for PC gaming, says Blizzard. So maybe they are going to be sticking to PC. They seem to be pushing this message pretty hard.
Yeah, and maybe Activision doesn't like money. Come on, this is going to be a big test of who's calling the shots around that new developer, you know, publisher relationship of Activision, Blizzard, and Vivendi. I can tell you this much. From what we've heard, Activision is very much in the driver's seat as far as calling shots. And if they're in the driver's seat, they are going to put this on console.
Well, that's exactly what I'm thinking is, like, if it ends up coming to console, we're going to know that it's probably Activision who is really in charge.
And I'm not saying it's going to be Blizzard that develops it.
I don't think we'll get Diablo 3. I think we'll get Diablo something. There'll be a franchise game that's not Diablo 3.
Maybe.
They've attempted that with StarCraft. And
they'll give it to Treyarch or something. They seem to give that everything else to Treyarch.
There's nothing about... like one of the
There was a console version of the original Diablo, I think, too, right?
Yeah. From
PlayStation.
Yeah.
From PS1. Yeah.
There's nothing... The whole holdup to World of Warcraft on console, allegedly, was that you could not translate the control scheme over to the controller well. There's nothing that's going to predicate...
The extra HUD and the stuff that makes it...
The mods.
The mods for a personalized experience.
High-level play.
Diablo doesn't need that. Diablo would come over to the consoles very well. Activision's going to look at it as a console publisher and want it to be on console. Even if Blizzard doesn't do the development in-house, I would be stunned if it doesn't come out on the consoles. Maybe not even at the same time.
But if it's designed for not, like PCs that aren't so high-end, then there's an argument for, well, you probably own something that runs it anyway.
Well, we had during the Q&A session at the Paris GDC, Rob Pardo he said that Microsoft was having a bit of lip service with PC gaming. They have their own game system now, so I don't think it's really in their best interest to support PC. And then in an interview with Gamasutra, Blizzard COO Paul Sams basically agreed with that. He said, I think similar to Rob, it would be great if they put more emphasis on the Windows operating system. And he said, certainly probably the most prominent operating system in the world, even more so than console boxes. So call from Blizzard for Microsoft to do more, and especially after we talked about the GFW event last week.
Dude, call from everybody for Microsoft to do more, but we'll see.
I don't know if it's in here, but I saw a quote. A Microsoft exec from Europe was quoted this week, and they were asked, like, why don't you release games the same time for Xbox 360 and PC?
Oh, yeah,
PC?
I didn't put
and
that
he was
in
like,
here.
If we did that, then people wouldn't buy the Xbox 360 version.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Interesting.
Really? Yeah. I would have thought it would be the other way around.
All right, so then, of course, also we found out that Blizzard, in addition to Diablo 3...
let me tell you a really funny story if you're done with Diablo 3. This is a really quick aside.
Yeah,
so you were laughing at the people who were responding to the petition online. I saw the funniest freaking internet comments on a story like I've seen in a really long time. Over on Game Daily, they ran this story that was Metal Gear Solid versus Peggle, which game is more awesome? And they like broke it down all over like 13, you know, it's like Libby and Chris. I mean, you know, they're having fun, right? So like, they were having fun with it, but there were people who were taking it serious. They're like, you can't fucking compare Metal Gear Solid and Peggle. What the hell is wrong with you people? You're such idiots. It's awesome. You should go read it. It's on Game Daily. It's
Slow News Day?
Oh, my God. It's
hard-hitting investigative journalism.
Hilarious.
It does sound pretty funny.
The comments underneath the story are just awesome. they're worth the price of admission
Troll
alone.
Bait.
All right. Other Blizzard news we have. The Diablo 3 isn't the only thing they have in development, or StarCraft, or the expansion for World of Warcraft. They have a fourth project going on, and it's a next-generation MMO. We kind of knew this because there have been job listings, but Vice President Rob Pardo kind of pretty much confirmed it in an interview with the German website named Online Welten. He was asked about
job Online Welten.
That's right. He was asked about job postings, and he said, yes, there's one more unknown project still in development. Wouldn't reveal anything about it, but he went on to say... keep in mind, basically, that Blizzard doesn't ship games until they're ready. They don't announce games until they're ready, so we might not hear about it for a long time.
Speaking of release dates, Diablo 3 2011, what are we talking about here?
I'm guessing before the end of 2009, but I don't know for sure.
Well, the speculation is that StarCraft's not going to make it this year, so that StarCraft will be the beginning of next year, maybe. So Diablo could be... end of next year or even 2009.
Here's my rule for figuring out when a Blizzard game is going to come out. You take the date that you take the day that you very
this is
first
a formula.
Time. So yeah, it's a formula and it works. You take the day, the very first day that you hear a release date, and you take the amount of time between that day and that release date, and you double it and add a year.
So 2011.
2011.
They haven't set a release date yet.
Right, they haven't set a release date yet. So, I mean, they might only be a few months away when they announce it. So then you just double it and add a year.
All right.
Double it and add. Okay, well, when they announce a release date, we'll come back to this formula.
So the MMO, maybe.
It's like figure out dog years.
All right, a bunch of other new game announcements this week. Chrono Trigger coming to the DS. Lots of people excited about this.
Favorite game ever.
Japanese magazine Shonen Jump confirmed that the game is going to start coming, or is going to come to the DS, sorry. It's been rumored for a long time. It's basically a port of the original game. They're going to add stylus controls.
They're going to add a new dungeon, yeah. I heard.
New dungeon.
Isn't that an odd place for a game like this to be broken?
No, actually, Shonen Jump is really huge.
What's odd about it?
Really big games will be in there. Like Final Fantasy X was in Shonen Jump for the first time. Yeah.
It's going to have stylus controls, a new dungeon, and wireless play, whatever that means. They haven't released
that. That means you can play it over your wireless connection. Uses the DS Wi-Fi system.
Okay.
Well, Chrono Trigger was a single-player experience.
Just giving him a
So how would you do that?
Thank
wirelessly.
You,
maybe you can bet on games at the Millennial Fair.
Could be.
you could take turns doing the feats of strength.
Yeah. So lots of people around the office are excited.
Don't joke, it might be.
It is.
That's what it probably is.
Andrew,
it is.
You said it's your favorite game.
I know it's tied with Super Metroid, but yeah.
Sam said it's one of his favorite games as well.
I think it is one of the finest 16-bit RPGs, and it really hasn't been whored out. It only came out once again on PS1, and...
Does anyone think they should have done a sequel or a full-on remake instead?
Well, they already did a sequel called Chrono Cross, which was not nearly as good as Chrono Trigger.
We were talking about it. I liked Chrono Cross.
It wasn't a sequel in like the true definition of sequel. It was a follow-up.
I really liked Chrono Cross.
Within the same kind of world.
You know why I probably liked Chrono Cross?
Why?
Because you never played Chrono Trigger.
I never played Chrono Trigger.
You bastard.
I never knew that was coming.
But yeah, the fact that they're revisiting Chrono, it makes you... hopeful that maybe a new real game.
Yeah, that's... game.
But yeah. I don't know if you'd want that either unless they actually reassembled the dream team that made it.
They can't reassemble the dream team.
Right.
But you don't need it. Like, Chrono Cross, for its failings, is still a quality product.
Yeah.
Like, I would take another game of that quality.
Yeah,
easily.
I would too.
Yeah.
I mean, the DS gets so many good games now.
Yeah.
It's popular.
That's awesome.
I know, Garnet, you really liked the Yakuza, right?
I did love Yakuza, absolutely.
Yakuza 3 was revealed this week.
Right, which is not Yakuza Kenzan, which is the feudal Japan one.
We've talked about that one. Right. You guys have talked about that one previously.
So this is set in modern day...
Fuck yes.
It's a continuation of Yakuza 2's story. Yeah. And it's going back to modern day. Yeah, they basically clarified in an article in Famitsu and said that Yakuza Kenzan was just a spin-off story. It wasn't meant to be like the next game in the series. It wasn't meant to be the next numbered game, basically.
Thank you, Yakuza people.
They started working on this one right after that finished, and it's going to take place in Tokyo, but also in Okinawa. Okinawa. Yep. Yeah.
Happy joy.
And
spring 2009
in Japan for PS3.
Did they say that? Because we have here that they don't have a release date
yet
for Japan.
I saw spring 2009.
All right. Well, then, and of course, U.S. release date, probably not until later 2009. Well, Yakuza 2 is coming out in September,
I believe. Still need to get through Yakuza 2 and Kenzan, hopefully.
Hopefully Kenzan, yeah. And then, of course, Harmonix announcing Rock Band 2 this week.
About damn time.
Interestingly, going to come to the 360 in September. 360 only.
Yeah, how much do you think that cost? Seriously, how much money do you think that cost?
But other versions are going to come before the end of the year. And presumably PlayStation 3 and Wii versions.
And PS2.
Yeah, it can't take them very long, considering it looks like Rock Band.
Well, they would get it out before November. They wouldn't hold it past
holiday season. Yep. It's kind of troubling for like Wii fans, because Rock Band just came out for Wii, and in a few months, the sequel comes out. Yeah.
They're going to have, we talked about, all previously downloaded DLC will be playable. It's going to support all the current Rock Band instruments. It's going to have its own new drum and guitar peripherals that are upgraded, but also backward compatible.
Made by third parties. That's the whole deal. Their whole deal is like they're like doing these licensed third party add-ons. Some of the things they had at the EA3 show were like a smoke machine, like a Rock Band smoke machine you hook up to your Rock Band.
I still think you're making that up.
I am totally not making that up.
Did they talk about cymbals? Are there third party cymbals?
Evidently, yeah. So evidently, you'll be able to add on to your drum kit, although it won't.
Is this embargoed? I haven't heard any of this.
Yeah, no, that's not. They showed it in their like, in their stuff. It was all part of the
machine. That's
the smoke. Yeah, it's the smoke machine. Ridiculous.
Do you need to buy like dry ice for your smoke machine?
I don't know.
You would have to.
It's all third party stuff. So basically, what they're doing
like
is
Mad Cat's dry ice in a bag.
they're like opening the doors to like doing all this third party stuff. Like they're gonna say, hey, you know what you want to make it. Like, this is part of their open philosophy. Like, you want to make an instrument? Fine, make an instrument. So you want to make a badass rock guitar? You want to make a badass drum set? You want to make a badass
the
mic?
The Nyko Glockenspiel?
Nyko Cowbell.
Nyko. Oh,
don't get me started.
As far as the actual game is concerned, they haven't said if there's any, like, what updates are going to come to the game, the core game itself. But the Harmonix CEO, Alex Rigopoulos, did say that they've had the benefit of the last 8 months to listen to our fans' requests and to build upon that foundation. So presumably there will be some tweaks to the actual game and, you know, hopefully online world tour mode.
Well, they also announced over 80 songs and I saw a leaked list of at least 10.
I've got that right here. It's good. Okay, and again, the game's going to be shown at E3. We'll probably have a lot more info then.
We will. And this list was leaked prior. Where?
It was leaked on the Score Hero forums.
Okay, so we're not leaking it.
Yes, the poster took a screen capture from... the game was shown on X-Play, and they got a screen capture from it that showed it off.
Much of a leak if it's on TV.
Yeah. I was just trying to make sure. I didn't realize it was off that. That's easy.
They've got Any Way You Want It by Journey, Pinball Wizard by The Who, Chop Suey by System of a Down, Panic Attack by Dream Theater, or Finger 11. They're not sure which, because it just had the song titles. Give It Away by Red Hot Chili Peppers, Everlong by Foo Fighters, Kids in America by Kim Wilde, and Hello There by Cheap Trick. What do you guys think?
Some good ones there.
Good stuff.
Do you want to hum any of them?
I wonder if that'll be a Circuit City. Would that be a Circuit City exclusive? Any Way You Want It?
Are you ready to rock?
You see, also Blockbuster tried to buy Circuit City this weekend, was shut down. They were like, "Nope, can't buy." Yep.
Hello, rejected there, by Circuit
ladies
City.
And gentlemen.
Yikes! Ouch.
Hello there, ladies and gentlemen.
And if you're still stuck on the original Rock Band, you're going to be able to play The Who very soon
this
in July.
This is awesome.
Via an AAP story, there's going to be a downloadable 12-pack of songs from The Who. It's coming on July 15th. Originally, they were going to have the whole Who's Next album. I'm sure everybody remembers hearing about that. But basically, they were missing master tracks. They couldn't find the master tracks, so they didn't want to do it. And what happened was they got members of The Who to help them make a best-of soundtrack of everything they could find. So it's going to include My Generation, Who Are You, and a bunch of live tracks. It's actually going to be the first live songs to be released as DLC for Rock Band.
Wow.
Bobo O'Reilly is going to be like exhausting to play.
Was that on the list?
It's on the list.
Nice.
Like each individual note is like.
Can you imagine how fun that would be on drums?
This is the sing along version.
This is the music version. Yeah. Well, here's another one. We already mentioned it. Top Gun Anthem. So if you're still playing Guitar Hero 3, Top Gun Anthem is going to be available today. Presumably, if they get it up.
Should be there.
I'm going to check after we're done recording.
Along with the Murloc song.
It's going to be totally free as well. So, and then also free, a new Halo map on July 7th.
Halo Day.
They're releasing a map called Cold Storage.
Wait, isn't July 7th Halo Day?
Yeah, it's Bungie Day.
Bungie Day,
Day, yeah. It's going to be... Cold Storage is going
to
be implemented in the...
Play Halo.
On Bungie Day?
Yeah, is there some kind of hat you're supposed to wear?
Take work off. It's a new national holiday.
Mr. Chief Papercraft.
I was talking with Luke. He told me it's a national holiday. We can all go home. Cold Storage is going to be implemented in the regular rotation of playlists that require the legendary map pack. So you need to have the legendary map pack to be joining in on the fun with this. But if you haven't purchased that yet, they're also going to be dropping the price on July 7th from 800 Microsoft points, which is just $10, to 600 Microsoft points, which is $750. It's a little bit off. And they're going to be releasing a free theme and gamer picks on July 7th only.
I think on Bungie Day, Dan Hsu is doing a one-man dramatic reading of Fall of Reach.
Can we podcast that?
Is he live streaming it onto the internet?
Yeah, that's...
He's shouting it from the rooftops of his apartment.
It'll be like Shatner's Rocket Man.
All right, jumping back to Mega Man 9, which we talked about last week.
Don't get me started.
We're going to get you started. We talked about it. It came out last week that it was coming to Live Arcade and PlayStation Network as well. Now Capcom goes back and says, no, it's WiiWare only.
Dagger in my heart.
It was basically, they said it was a mistake that it appeared on their E3 roster as a 360 and PlayStation game currently slated for WiiWare only. I still suspect they might announce it for the other two. I think it's inevitable. I think they were just upset that it leaked out early.
As I talked about on your kids show, whatever that is.
Kids show, yeah.
One Up FM every Monday kids on the One Up Radio Network.
Kidsshow.oneup.com.
I like to call it the kids table.
I kind of like the kids
table. As I talked about it, I'm happy that it exists. As a old school Mega Man fan, you know, if this is all I can get, I'm glad it's happy. I'm glad it's there, but in no world did I want 8-bit graphics on this, especially 8-bit graphics that look worse than Mega Man 2. Today, another site had a lot of screens of it, and they're all pretty bad looking.
Why do you hate the
classics? You were saying that the Wario Land game was bad too, and then you actually played it and you liked it.
Well, okay, maybe Mega Man's sprite has amazing animation, and maybe the backgrounds are doing something that I can't tell from these still shots, but you saw the same still pictures, and like, show me a Mega Man 2 screen, show me a Mega Man 9 screen, every Mega Man 2 level looks better. Like, there's a shot of him fighting a dragon, the dragon looks crappy compared to the dragons in Mega Man 2 and 3, you know, and like, Mega Man fans have expectations.
Why don't you like games?
I love games.
Are you sure that they have expectations after the last like 5 years of Mega Man games? They might have been whittled down quite a bit.
I don't know. Maybe it'll be excellent. Inafune said he went in and like worked on the bosses himself, and maybe this
is a total series reboot. They're starting from the beginning, and then like Mega Man 10 is going to be a 16-bit game, and
oh, that would
build it up again.
That's a really cool idea.
I just came up with that. I'm available.
Please be true.
I like that. That's a cool idea.
All right, and if you're a Mega Man fan who's sad that it's not coming to PlayStation Network, there's also other sad news about PlayStation Network. PS3 update 2.40 was pulled after some major, major problems.
Yeah,
actually, a lot of different PS3s problems. Yes.
I'm really bummed because I didn't get it for like these 6 hours it was available.
There were a lot of problems. You should maybe be happy. There were small problems, including people said that their mics were cutting out when they played after they downloaded it. But then there were some major problems, including consoles remaining frozen at the initial start screen when they turned them on afterwards.
That's a problem.
Was there ever any explanation where like certain models were more likely to have that happen to them? Or
from what I could see, looking over the forums at a very general view, like, it seemed to be happening just randomly all over the place. Some people were trying to say, I know there were some people on the official PlayStation forum saying, I had the Metal Gear Solid theme and mine messed up, so maybe it's because of themes, because, you know, they replace icons and stuff. But then somebody else came in and said, I had it too, and it didn't do anything. So
that's unfortunate.
It seems very bizarre and random.
There was some stories floating around that it affected backwards compatibility on the 80 gig. Was there any truth to that?
I don't know anything has been confirmed at this point.
In that there was new codecs or whatever they use, so that games that previously didn't work did.
Sort of like the Microsoft updating.
Yeah, and I hope they get it sorted out for the weekend because I do want it.
yeah, I hope so too. But I mean, for people,
N-Guy got his first trophy. I saw N-Guy got a bronze Super Stardust HD trophy. He was very excited.
Mm-hmm. For people who got their consoles bricked, though, I mean, they've got to be pretty bummed out.
Well,
there's no fixing that for the weekend.
Sony's taking care of everyone, but it's a major...
But on this weekend,
yeah, this
too,
weekend like, sucks. Yeah. And it is a major PR nightmare because they finally deliver the big update everybody wants, and it doesn't.
Yeah, they can't really sling anymore.
Currently,
PS3 fans, no more slinging arrows at the 360 gear because there was plenty of forum outcry very quickly over this.
But
one.
I will say, there's never really been any OS update for any console that's this ambitious, and yeah, it's kind of sad that this happened to it.
Some of the updates for the 360 have been pretty...
Yeah, I'd say 360's redone the front end on the blades a couple of times.
But in terms
of pretty
like
ambitious.
Offering whole new kinds of functionality.
I would agree with Shane.
Cross-game functionality.
I guess I agree with that.
Yeah, you can't compare adding a blade.
I did like that some of the comments in our story were like, it didn't break mine. There wasn't anything wrong with it. they're like, you guys are just blowing it out of proportion. But
you're on the Microsoft pay, aren't you? You get your paycheck from Bill Gates, don't you?
There is currently one.
He's no longer an employee.
Whatever.
There's currently one known fix for people who do have their systems broken, which is to reformat their hard drive, get rid of everything that's on it.
So does that work? And what you have to do is you have to dismount the hard drive from the PS3, mm-hmm. connect it to a PC,
yes.
and then reformat it through the PC, and then put it back into the PS3.
Yes.
Oh.
Okay. That sounds friendly.
It's very nice.
Hey,
and also, all of your save games are gone as a bonus.
The only saving argument you get there is you could say that, well, at least there's a way to do that. I mean, that is...
Yeah, I guess.
Some sort of... I am just looking for the bright side of the cloud a little bit.
Hopefully
there.
They can do something where maybe people won't have to send in their systems. Like, maybe they can take their hard drive out and, like, hook it up to a PC and, like, download something onto the PC that will fix it. We'll see.
That's, like, even worse.
It's
like another,
I know, but I mean,
step.
It's just... It's easier than and less time-consuming than sending it into Sony and having to wait.
What kind of connector does it have on the hard drive?
It's actually a laptop connector, so... Ooh. You'd have to have an interface for
it. Or, I mean, theoretically, you could just download something onto like a USB stick, put that in your PS3, and then
mount from the USB stick.
If it would boot to where it
that
could read that.
That sounds like the preferable.
That does sound preferable. Yeah. Now that boot, I think about it.
If it would boot to read the USB, but I don't know what the boot sequence is on a PS3. Does it read USB port before it reads hard drive?
I don't know.
But I hope that Sony didn't stop listening after my first recommendation and actually listen to that. Okay, if your PS3 is broken, I'll give you something to do for the July 4th weekend. You can download the new closed beta. No. That sounds awful. You can download the new closed beta for the next MMORPG from Square Enix. It's a game called Concerto Gate, and we've got the closed beta up on Filefront, our sister site. It's going to be running from July 1st until July 14th, and you can go and download it right now.
There you go.
Play it over the weekend. Check it out.
It's got cute little characters and stuff in it. It looks Alice.
And it's a free MMO. You pay for items, right?
Yeah, and then it's the sequel to...
It's a sequel to one that was available, something else gate, that was only available in Japan.
Only in Japan, but it was huge, right?
I think so. So there you go.
Wow.
That's the news.
There you go.
People have stuff to do now.
There you go. Go out there and grill some hot dogs. Be careful if you're using fireworks.
And also, you know, to prepare yourself for what you're about to hear.
Yeah.
You might want to get out a notebook. There's a lot of notes to be taken. There's almost like, you know, footnotes.
Let me just mention that we'll have a news story up when this podcast goes up that will have links for people to all the articles we talk about and all of the books we talk about.
We being Dennis.
Well, a little bit of us, a little bit of Dennis. Mostly Dennis.
Mostly Dennis.
And really, yeah, it's heady stuff.
I can't wait to hear it now. You've been building it up so much. I wish I was there.
It's really like nothing we've done before.
If you listen on the 4th
really?
Of July.
It is like nothing we've done before.
And I want to say that we went into it not knowing at all what to expect.
Me and Philip came down with a big
stack of questions from the boards.
I know.
We're still going
to submit
to them to like Dennis. I'm sure he'll be eager to answer them. And we'll get those up in like maybe a written feature. But we just sat there and Dennis kind of holds court.
Well, he gave you guys at least a little bit of notice. I sat down here to run the show and I literally had no idea what he was
going to
do.
He told me he had like a treatise he's about to give, and we just kind of sit back and enjoy the ride.
I thought we were going to talk about Too Human and like reception of the demo and all, and then we go off down the
grand social experiment that we're all taking part in.
If you guys listen to that segment on the 4th of July, you will not need to go see fireworks
because
you'll have them in audio form.
Oh my goodness, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, enjoy this intermission. It's like this episode of One of Yours is like Apocalypse Now redo. It's
there
like
you
four
go.
Hours long. And you're about to get to the part where they're at the Vietnamese French mansion. Really confusing.
This analogy
that's a great analogy.
That is a great analogy.
I like that a lot.
All right, so go over to the microwave, throw in a bag of popcorn, get ready, because when we come back, it will be Dennis Dyack telling us all about the Too Human reception on the forums. For these guys, we're going to go off and enjoy a 3-day weekend and play some games. For Andrew and Shane and Philip and John, this is Garnet saying thank you. We will talk to you next week. Until then, well, after the next segment, we're Ghost. All right, everybody, we're back, and put on your thinking caps because, well, if you were here for the One Console Future discussion, you know what our guest can be like. That's Mr. Dennis Dyack, who's the chief guy of Silicon Knights.
I
would call him the iconoclastic lightning rod
of Silicon Knights.
Official title. That's on his business card.
I mean, his PR handler is here, and I can tell she's had a frazzled week. I mean, she's saying she might go work for Amy Winehouse after Two Human Shows.
Well, yes.
Easier job, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited. And
it's Canada Day.
It is Canada Day.
I'm wearing a Canada hat. It's Canada Day today that we're doing this. And this is going to be airing on the 4th of July.
So
happy 4th of July and Canada Day for everybody.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
It's a great time to be living where we're living. So.
Peace between our two nations.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's a major feeling of peace all around. Like, Dennis is spreading peace.
Provided you have a passport if you want to cross.
across the border. I want to get one of those Nexus passes so we can speed the delivery with the retinal scan. I got to get on that, but it takes a while, I hear.
All right, folks. So here we go. Let me break this down for you a little bit. Dennis actually wanted to come on the show, and I got to tell you, he's sitting here in front of us with this ginormous laptop and a little syllabus of what he wants to discuss with us today.
Got a lot to go over.
He has multiple tiered bullet pointed lists. He's got a very nice hierarchy laid out here, and it's
is this a syllabus or a manifesto?
Yes,
it is.
It's kind of both. It's a syllabifesto.
A syllabifesto. Dude, that is an awesome snicklet.
I like it.
That is an awesome snicklet. We are logging that one. Anyway, we're going to do that. Andrew also has some questions from the fans on the message boards. We might, mix in here and there.
I don't know if I can talk about message boards today.
Oh.
I'm kidding. I'm here to talk about message boards. I guess I'm here to talk about a specific thing that happened on a place called NeoGAF.
We actually reported on this
last week.
It was so controversial that,
Yeah, and I think we can entitle this piece NeoGAF, Waving, Not Drowning. And, I think I should just start right in and tell you guys. And I have to say this. It all started here. It all started with you guys. You guys don't know how. So it's going to be a long, twisted tale of hopefully entertainment and enjoyment.
Oh, dear.
So, but I'll just jump right in and interject and let's talk and hopefully.
Hold hands. Kumbaya.
I think for the uninitiated, we should just say about a week ago, Dennis did go on the NeoGAF message board and started a thread that was basically like, "Are you against Tohuman or are you for Tohuman? State your status to the users of that message board."
Correct.
Yeah. Stand and be counted.
Stand and be counted.
And just to be fair as well, from the journalism side, several previews came out earlier this week, and several of our fellow authors came out on a very clear side.
Yeah, and
took some lumps.
And absolutely. And so the question is, first state is, those were some awesome previews. Silicon Knights.
How awesome were they?
Well, so awesome that they were reviews. And I have to say, and I've said this before, it's very difficult for me to find, besides you guys, and I'm not just saying that because I'm here, and I said this earlier in the 1UP show, I think 1UP was the actually only preview where it talked about the game and didn't make a judgment. And the question is, no one has a final review build yet. Everyone has made impressions. And I don't know if this is the case or not. Maybe it's because I'm surrounded by Tohuman, but, Tohuman seems like to have garnered the most previews in the history of video games. I have never seen so many people say...
I think it was a slippery slope because, one or two that first came out, they were a little more opinionated, a little more like, I beat the whole game, here's my overall impressions. I think that kind of opened the floodgates and people were like, oh, I can obviously just talk about the whole game now.
Well, did you guys consider that when it's not the final game, but it appears to be the complete game, like plot-wise and content-wise?
Yeah.
Did you guys consider that before you sent it out, thinking that this might happen?
Yeah, and...
the PR person definitely did.
Oh, no. She did. She's shaking her head, and here's the thing. There is, in my opinion, there's a problem in our industry, and I've talked about this before, where, as an example, you get a game, you have 2 days to play through the whole thing and put a review out, and what we decided to do, because I...
Amen, brother.
Yeah, I believe... Well, thank you. See? We're almost on the same page, totally. But we decided a long time ago that Tohuman is a game that will speak for itself. It's a great game, and it's got a lot of depth, and we're going to give people the ability to spend some time with it, a long time for the preview build, and a long time for the final build, so there can actually be a credible review. And the downside is that it was pretty clearly stated, please do not give a review on this. This is a preview build only. No one has final code yet. And you hope that when you send that out that the journalist will understand that and say, okay, let's wait till we get the final one. And I've seen things like where someone's, was it civil rights were violated?
Yes.
And it's...
Well, if we're going to get into specifics on this, I think you're talking about a alleged post from a message board, and this guy claims to be a journalist, and he went on a scathing, diatribe against the game, full of profanity, and, it's never been... clear it up if he really is a journalist. And then like other sites, some of these blog sites ran that.
Oh, was that the rumored Eurogamer thing?
Yeah, Eurogamer guy on their message board. But then like other sites are
Do you think it was really credible?
No, but then like you see sites, running like you know credible sites, allegedly credible sites, running a quote from that like the worst fucking game I've played in 5 years as the title of a, of the story with a Photoshop picture of Dennis Dyack
with a tear,
and like that's not supposed to be like that's supposed to be journalism. You know?
Well, we're going to get into like a much broader subject here very quickly, which is you know painting under the guise of journalism these incredibly sensational stories, all in the interest of garnering hits and getting traffic, which builds ad dollars because you want to get your CPMs. I mean that's just that's
the internet.
That's the internet, right?
Yeah, I mean, how
it's a certain
works.
It's a certain majority of folks reporting in every sector of the internet, whether it's entertainment or news or whatever, what have you. I mean, that's not unique to the video game world,
right? And actually, that's right on topic and what we're going to talk about. And so I'll say a couple things first. So a lot of people are asking why I made the NeoGAF post. And I will say that the reason and the instant that there was a confirmation that I'd be on the 1UP podcast is when I decided to make that particular NeoGAF post, and it was to make a point. And so let me start off by saying what my influences were for the post.
Molson's Canadian.
No, believe it or not, this you might find interesting, but it all starts with you guys. I was at a Peter Drucker symposium.
That's cool.
A week before, and I'll talk about that. I had simultaneously finished a book called The Player of Games by Ian M. Banks and another book from Neil Postman called Technopoly. Okay. And I happened to be all this in synergy, all this happening. There's a lot of things going on right now with Silicon Knights and Too Human and all other things.
Sure.
And then I was reading over the NeoGAF and I just went, this site needs reform. So.
You snapped.
No, I didn't snap. Well, you can actually, you know what? You can, at the end of this, let me explain, and then you guys can decide whether I snapped or whether it was a smart thing to do. Or, you know, history is going to be the judge ultimately.
Call to revolution.
Okay, yeah. So lay on us the top line.
The top line is essentially I did it in the hopes of reforming the way people think about forums, technology, and the effect on society, and the integrity of journalism, and what a review versus a preview, and the thing that I call, or not I call, that Neil Postman calls scientism, where people use statistics meaninglessly that affect society in very negative ways. And there are some things specifically with this what we'll talk about. So let me first talk about the Peter Drucker Symposium. I don't know if anyone knows Peter Drucker, but he is considered a management guru in the world. He actually... he wrote a book that influenced my life pretty heavily called Post-Capitalist Society, where he talks about knowledge-based companies. And I mentioned it in the interview that we did. It started off with a story panel. And that also all started here, actually. And during the roundtable on story, a roundtable on storytelling in the industry.
Right.
This is at GDC, so people know.
Yes.
We'll put links to it like in the news post for one of yours. So.
Right. And there was a discussion on how important writers are in the industry. And, you know, we're big believers in writers. Silicon Knights, as a rule, does not outsource. We don't contract. Okay. We want everyone full time. And we're big believers in ethical business practices that support people and create a culture where everyone feels important. That's paramount in our survival, and I think the survival of society. Anyway,
I think we can all sign on to that.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, you'd be surprised. In the roundtable, I think I was the only one who signed up for that. And as a matter of fact, the big controversy and the reason we did the interview was Matthew from Sabre said, what did he say? We cannot afford moral... imperatives.
He said that his company, Sabre Interactive, is a developer without moral imperatives, that they can't have that.
And they cannot afford moral imperatives.
So they don't need to behave ethically?
Well, he just said it's not cost effective. And so at that point, I responded, you know.
Well, it's not cost effective to build automobiles without polluting the environment, but like someone has to hold you to do it.
Well, that's social responsibility. And the interesting thing was, I think I was the only one on the panel that strongly argued this, and I went, we have to be companies of moral imperatives, because if we're going to be, if you believe that people are your most valuable resource, you have to treat them really well. He responded with an interview that basically, you know, sort of read like, why Dennis Dyke is wrong, but I agree. And he says, you know, he said things like, he loves his people. And that's really good. And that's important. And I hope that that was a better thing for the company. But the most ironic thing about that is that in your article, you mentioned post-capitalist society. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that a bit in the interview.
Yeah.
The Peter Drucker Society actually contacted me and wanted me to join their society. So I was just at a symposium a couple weeks or a week before I did this post on NeoGAF. And the interesting thing about the Peter Drucker Society is he is considered like the guru of modern management. And as an example, he's done some incredible things in his life. He actually predicted the rise of the Nazi Party in Germany. And there's a bunch of crazy stuff. But the most interesting thing, it's management as a liberal art. A lot of people think it's business, but he's all about ethical business practices. And they're doing this thing, it's a talk called the responsibility gap. And the responsibility gap is like the inconvenient truth, you know, with Al Gore talking about the polar ice caps melting, and that's ecological responsibility. This is about social responsibility and ethical business practices in the industry, in all industries, because there is a large concern with a lot of people, particularly around the world, that society is starting to crumble because no one has faith in business anymore. No one has faith in politicians. How many people do you talk to and say, do you really trust the company you work for? Right? And they're saying that this is just as big of a crisis as Al Gore's ecological crisis, and society is going to continue to downturn unless someone steps up, or people start stepping up and say, it not only makes good business sense to be ethical, but it's also smart and better for society, and it's something that we all as a group have to start taking social responsibility for. Now, the other interesting thing about Peter Drucker, not only does he talk about this for business, so whether you're drilling oil, in my case, we're making Too Human as an example. You've heard me often say that there's social messages that I think are really important. But he also talks a lot about nonprofit organizations. And even though there's nonprofit, their goal is to somehow really improve society to a better way. And that's really important, and we'll come back to it later. So that's the Peter Drucker part. So just hold that
file. File it over here.
That's right.
All right, so we got that piece laid down.
Yes.
And I think I probably don't completely understand because I wasn't there for the story discussion.
Sure.
With the guy from Saber Interactive. I mean,
sure.
How did, just for a real quick for my edification, how did ethicality get tied into a discussion about storytelling in games?
Okay, so basically, Matthew said story wasn't important.
Okay. And then I remember that was the top line headline a bunch of people ripped out.
Right. And I said, no, story's really important.
Okay.
And all our writers are on staff full time. Okay. And I think all writers should be full. And I said, we have to really watch out for Hollywood. And some of the things in Hollywood are very good, but everyone in Hollywood is contracted.
Okay.
So they have no permanent jobs. And some people start saying, no, this is a really good idea. And I'm saying, no, I think it's a really bad idea.
You don't want to sweatshop people. Well,
and we're seeing a lot of these Hollywood screenwriters coming in doing a bunch of high-profile games.
Outsourcing.
You know, outsourcing, yeah.
Yeah, like you don't want to see like it being outsourced and then people being sweatshopped to death for not very good money, not getting cut into the
business.
Right, I mean, okay.
And you hear how good the Gears of War story is going to be, and then you play the game, right?
But that doesn't necessarily have to be in-house. I mean, there are people who have good legal representation, that have good contracts with the people they're working with, that do good work as a third party, right?
So I think that's definitely possible. But what tends to happen then is you start focusing on an elite group, and it's not socially responsible to contract everything out.
Okay.
Because the vast majority of people will lose in that scenario.
Okay. So now I sort of understand. So that's where the Peter Drucker, the management, and the outsourcing, that's what this whole ball of wax is over here.
Yeah. So I think Matthew was saying it's not cost effective. We can't do it. And I say it's. And my response was it's socially responsible. We have to do it. And actually, there was even something on when we were talking about outsourcing, Susan? Was it Next Gen Biz? Where we talked about what the future of the industry was.
Game Daily,
and there were people talking about various things. Should you outsource?
Mm-hmm.
One person actually said it's irresponsible not to outsource, and I can't remember who it was.
But Ubisoft, perhaps?
No, well, I don't know. I don't know who it was, but the question is, irresponsible to whom? The money? But
well,
you know, and
right,
and the only question I ask is, I understand the philosophy, but we have to, if money is all we're worried about in society,
then we're going to have a lot of social problems because money doesn't even exist. It's a concept in our own minds, and it's making people generally pretty unhappy. So anyway, let's move on.
Have you read the history of the 20th century?
No, no, I haven't.
No, I meant just have you read the history in general? I mean, that is the history of the 20th century.
Oh, I know. I know.
I don't think it's an if, Dennis.
Yes, I know. I know. So well,
are we getting to where the gap of responsibility and ethical responsibility happens with internet message boards?
Yeah, we're getting there.
Because I think that's where the ultimate gap is.
I think we're still about 5 minutes out from that stop.
Oh no, we're a bit. Right. So then also in parallel, I finished a book called The Player of Games by Ian M. Banks. And the most interesting thing, as you guys know, I'm really interested in the effects of technology on society.
Right, which is what we got into with the one console future thing.
Exactly. And but the most interesting thing about this culture series in Ian M. Banks is I read the stories to see how culture, it's this futuristic culture where man and machine are completely merged symbiotically and not in a negative way. And all of the books are generally about the culture meeting other cultures in space and how they're going to adapt and try to influence them for the better. And in this particular one, okay, it's called The Player of Games, and they meet this essentially empire that's based around this one thing called the Game of Azad. Okay, and imagine.
I think I saw this episode of Next Generation.
No, it's very it's very different than what you think.
Okay. It was cute.
So the game itself is taught to some people when they're born, and they learn the game all their life. And there's a grand tournament that happens every 5 or 6 years, and whoever wins that tournament actually controls the empire and becomes the emperor. This game is so difficult that no one thinks they can win. No one knows the rules because it's from a different culture. And essentially, the culture has this one game player within the culture, and it's the whole galaxy, so he's very, very rare. He's human. Well, he's part machine, too. But essentially, they go in there and say, can you go in there and see if you can win this game because we want to reform this culture for the better? And the game, everyone thinks is impossible to win. Does that sound familiar? Like, there's no winning when you post on the NeoGAF?
This is true.
Okay. So I was influenced by that.
Okay. And the result of these influences smashing together in a cultural morass.
Yes.
Is.
Well, we're still going.
Oh, I thought we were there. Wait. No.
Then there was another.
Oh, wait, there's a third ingredient.
Still percolating in Dennis's
mind. Still
mine.
Percolating. And yeah. There's one more thing that I finished simultaneously with this book, and it's a book called Technopoly by Neil Postman.
This is like a Carlos Castaneda saga. I mean, you know.
It's all coming together in the end, though. Stick with it.
Yeah. So with Technopoly. Okay, the idea of Technopoly is that technology has a monopoly over North America and our culture.
Okay.
And it talks about the surrender of culture to technology. And the most interesting thing, and I can talk about that for ages, and really, he comes up with something called scientism, Neil Postman in 1992. And it really is how people use science to try to invoke social reform effectively, actually get social reform, but it's completely ineffective, and it's with the use of numbers. So as an example of one of these things.
Hold on, Dennis.
Yes.
You got to re-explain that, because I got to tell you, that came out as numbers, science, social reform. I don't know what happened.
Okay, the idea of using science and equations.
Okay, science and equations.
Statistics.
Statistics is a really good example.
Okay.
To create social reform and change people's opinions of things.
Okay, that's scientism.
Scientism.
And it is or is not effective.
It does change society, but it's really bad for society.
Okay. Okay, now you can move forward.
So here's an example, and we're going to hit one subject where I'm pretty sure you'll agree. But one example of this is, I think in the 1800s, someone came up with a formula that they claimed they could tell the difference of whether someone was innocent or guilty, a criminal or an honest person.
And it was a trough of water, and they either floated or...
No, that's going further back, but this is actually in the 18th century, and it was due to their jaw structure and their alignment, and actually he testified in court a few times, and people were actually sent to jail because these formulas turned out. There's other things,
wow,
too.
So, okay.
But this sounds crazy, right?
Pretty nuts, yes.
Okay, so let's take something that's a little more common day.
Okay.
The IQ. It's pretty much understood that the IQ test really is not good for determining whether you're smart or not.
I think that's been pretty much exposed a couple of decades
ago,
right?
But people still use it. If you say, hey, I've got an IQ of 190, people automatically assume you're smart. And it's just absolutely okay. So we're going to get to some other things. But so here's one that I'm just going to hit on now because I don't want to spend too long on this stuff. There's these things called ratings in video games. and this thing called Metacritic.
Oh, man.
Oh, and if your Metacritic isn't a certain color and number,
that's right,
then you're a complete failure.
And the idea of this kind of thing of...
And, now, I want to throw this in here. Shane, you invoked Metacritic last week when I said that I bought Operation Darkness. You're like, wait, this has a Metacritic score of 40. How could you buy that?
I believe I did say that, yeah.
Well, so the interesting thing about these kind of things of scientism, it takes mathematics that are really almost meaningless and equates meaning, but it actually creates social reform.
Look, this is just a fancy way of talking about statistics. You ever take a statistics class in college?
Absolutely.
It's a freaking mess. I mean, yep. The statistics coach, well, I don't know what you call it, a coach, the statistic professor at Texas Tech, where I went, like, basically taught the entire course curriculum, yep. And then in the last 2 weeks of the curriculum, explained to you that basically everything that he taught you was bullshit, because if he changed a couple of parameters, he could make any of the statistical analysis that he had come up with tell you anything you wanted them to tell you.
Absolutely correct. And this could be, this is 100%, no, this is 98% accurate 75% of the time. And then you're like, what are you talking about? You have no idea.
Right.
And so, yeah, absolutely. And so the idea with all these scientism things, what it does, in my opinion, and probably in Neil Postman's opinion, and he's not around, so I can't ask him, I wish I could, is it removes grounding and holistic things. So the idea of a Metacritic score, whether you're 85 or 90, people stop reading the reviews, stop getting the real meat of it and just look at the number. And that's when I said to you guys a long time ago, I really like what you were doing with the score change to go to an alpha rather than numeric, because people didn't know. What's the first thing they tried to do?
Was convert. I mean, that just shows you how off kilter we were from where that mass market thought is, right? I mean, the immediate response was, well, how do I convert this to a 10-point scale?
Exactly.
You don't. It's not meant to be converted to a 10-point scale.
I think we all
scale.
Agree that, like, the aggregate, you know, culture that has taken over the video game industry, and it really has, like, both, you know, game rankings and Metacritic, like, they rule PR, and it's very...
And the game producers themselves.
Right, yeah.
I mean, the very bonus structure of the guys building the games, especially at major publishers, is predicated on their freaking Metacritic score.
You know,
it's absurd.
We're so used to it, but it is very abstract. Like, you know, having been playing games since I was a kid, and, you know, the idea of, like, back in the day, me being concerned about, like, well, this got a 74, like, I don't know if I want to even try it, you know? It is a very strange and commercialized abstraction that we've all gotten very used to.
And it's completely, everyone accepts, it's completely meaningless, but still it moves society in ways. Another good one is, Susan and I were talking about this briefly. Susan's our PR agent, by the way.
She's sitting here.
She's sitting here over in the corner. Is the plus 11? 11 plus standard in the UK, where you would take a test and you're either allowed to go into business or trade, depending on this one test. And it was
Japan is a very similar.
It was abolished in, like, 71, but before that, it completely changed society in a really bad way. And they had this whole numerical score for this, and people thought it was good for a while. You know, so anyway, so that scientism and the effects of these meaningless statistics and how we feel about things, people really need to understand.
Because Metacritic is part of your post on the NeoGAF.
Absolutely.
It's part of a bargain you're striking with the users.
Wait, you put Metacritic?
No. Please understand, this is all going to make sense. And
okay.
I absolutely agree that I use Metacritic for a very specific reason.
I'm just here to ask for clarification.
Yep. Is this okay?
No, dude, we're down this rabbit hole 50% of the way, at least.
We're wagging the dog. Continue.
We're wagging the dog.
Keep it rolling.
So one of the things in our industry, and one of the things that's happening, and I'm reading a book right now called Convergence Culture by Henry Jenkins. Very, very smart. Talks about how new media is combining and how things are changing.
Cool.
And how absolutely games like Survivor are now predicated by interaction over the internet, talk in the water cooler.
Sure.
And actually, our industry is changing so much that forum posts are actually, you guys have read that article about the boards,
mm-hmm.
and it's really, really true, and it's making a difference. And so I just looked at all this stuff and said, I think someone needs to make a social statement, and someone needs to come out and do something that really pinpoints things for what they are. And I looked at the NeoGAF, and I think it's got a lot of potential. There's some critical people on there, but I think it's not managed very well. And I think people need to point out some things very specifically so people understand exactly what's going on and understand the technology for what it is. And one of the things I want to talk about right now is a very complex subject that is called reciprocity. And reciprocity is the idea of equal information exchange that we're having right now, because we can look into each other's eyes, see your emotions. And in general, technology is misunderstood. You've heard me say this before. People in general believe that technology improves communication. Okay, that's generally accepted. I know you're shaking your head a bit, and I agree because you're in this with me. But this is predicated largely by technology allows us to communicate in more ways than was ever possible before. I don't think anyone would disagree with that.
Sure.
So we can now send text messages. We can use a telephone, a wireless phone, video conference. There's these podcasts. You know, there's forums, message boards. I can send emails back 24 hours. I can connect it with my BlackBerry. But what people do not understand is that does not improve communication. It changes fundamentally communication. And what's lost in that is reciprocity and the ability for us to react and have reciprocal information being exchanged in a way that's socially responsible. So as an example, our whole culture over the last several thousand years has been built upon face-to-face interaction and people talking to each other. And when we're, say, having a game of chess, or we're going to get together and play a game of Dungeons and Dragons, the chance of me saying to you, Shane, if say it's a competitive game like chess,
right,
I'm going to make you my bitch, as an example, or your mama, or whatever, that's unlikely ever to happen. However, if we're going to play a game and we don't know each other over Xbox Live,
there's no accountability.
Right.
Well, look, you may need to... This is nothing new. This is the allegory of the fucking cave.
Well, but
come on, I mean, we're all the way back.
These shadows on the wall that is Neogath, that is every forum. I think what Dennis is getting to is that he's trying to make people, for once, be accountable and be real and try
right.
to like
so,
try to drop the illusions of cool and I'm following the group thing.
Well, hold yes,
all right, and, I'm getting ahead of myself.
And so if you take text messaging as an example or forums, mm-hmm. so there's been a lot of psychological analysis and it's been pretty much proven that. These type of things are ripe for miscommunication, frustration, anger.
Absolutely.
Okay. And as an example, the U.S. military stopped using text messaging because it resulted in too many incidences of insubordination. And so it's not a surprise, right?
Not at all.
But what is a surprise, okay, or what people, the whole idea of technopoly and monopolies, is people stop thinking about these things. They just take it for what it is. People will read the message boards and take them as credible, and then you have these credible websites suddenly posting these things as headlines, as we already talked about.
Right.
And it's all of a sudden accepted that this is true.
Which I would like to bring up in Metal Gear Solid 2 near the end. There's a point at which Kojima is speaking, you know, to you directly, and he's saying that just because you can post something on a message board doesn't mean that it's true, but the fact that you can, the fact that anybody in the world can go on the internet and put their thought up there and it's just as valid as anybody else's thought, it's very damaging,
you know,
for society.
We should just turn off all their board posting rights. We should just turn off everybody's like voice.
So, well, this is now going to take, I think, a turn that you guys will find interesting. So let's talk about Jeff Bell.
Let's talk about Jeff Bell, who recently departed Microsoft. As a primer on him.
Oh, come on, dude! It's not good to kick people when they're down.
No, but
dude, I'm here to defend him.
But
actually,
what's the quick on Jeff Bell there, Kolar?
So he did a post on NeoGAF, or actually,
it was a private message, right?
People were making fun of him for his presentation at Microsoft's E3 conference last year, and he sent a private message to one of the people making fun of him on NeoGAF, and he said, "What's your contribution to society?"
Which is actually a pretty good question.
Yes.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. He asked the right question, but did it in the worst possible way.
Right.
And actually, his quote was, "And your contribution to society is what?" Okay, which I have here. And the bottom line is, he had it right, but I think it wasn't executed in the right way. So if we're going to look at the NeoGAF, okay, as a quote.
Hold on a second.
Okay.
Let's not draw comparisons between people who elect to put themselves in the public spotlight and discussion of general things that were, I mean, and anything else. I mean, if you as, so there's a whole big difference here between talking about a game or talking about a subject or having a conversation with another person.
Sure.
And me saying, I'm going to be a public figure. I'm going to walk out in front of the audience at E3, the entire audience of people sitting there in the crowd and the people on the internet watching the streaming and be a public figure. And if I elect to do that, then I have put myself out there in front of those people and I am subject, just as I am, having done this show for 3 years. And trust me, I've been called every conceivable name and denigrating comment ever.
Dennis Dyke is here to embrace your pain.
But I have no pain. There's no pain to it.
I'm
happy with what I'm doing. I mean, when I decided to do this a long time ago, I mean, I put myself out there. And if people want to say that shit, that's perfectly their prerogative.
I mean, you shouldn't let them get to you. And Jeff probably shouldn't have let them get to you.
Exactly. I mean, he's way out of line doing that. You can't do that, Dennis. I mean, there's no... Like, what's your contribution to society? Dude, you decided to go out there and act like that. If you don't want to do it, don't do it.
I'm not trying to say what he did was right. I'm trying to say he had the right idea and he expressed it in the wrong way.
But what was the right idea about
okay,
that?
Okay, so let me get to it. Okay. So if you're going to take the NeoGAF and you're going to take if you're going to take a Peter Drucker approach to how would you categorize NeoGAF, I think NeoGAF, and I don't know if it makes money or not, but I'm going to constitute it as a nonprofit organization.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a big money. It's got some ads, maybe enough to pay for hosting.
So I could be wrong, but I think I would call it a nonprofit.
Yeah.
And under Peter Drucker's world, even nonprofits have to contribute positively to society. So if you think about it, people post on the message boards to talk about their games, have a fun time, and really enjoy, you know, what happens there. And I don't know if you know this, but here's a really good example of technology and reciprocity. I think... And you might not have all the information, and I did some research on this. He didn't post necessarily as himself. It was anonymous.
They tracked his emails.
They tracked his emails, and a moderator exposed him.
Right.
As really Jeff Bell.
And that moderator was banned, right?
Well, I don't know if the moderator was banned.
At the time he was. He may be back. I don't know.
Okay, but the resolution is under these kind of social things that no one generally knows any of that. Anyone just thinks that he did this on his own. And what the mistakes he made, I would say in general, is people's understanding of privacy on the internet is generally misunderstood.
You have no privacy on the internet.
That is correct. But you know what? People who post under these pseudonyms think they do.
That's why I post under my name. Other than like I need to change my NeoGAF handle, but I mean... Like-
I post under my name too. And people really question whether I should do that. As a matter of fact, and everyone thinks that when you post on the NeoGAF, you automatically lose. And maybe after this podcast, you guys still will think that this was a loss, and I don't know, but time will tell. The bottom line is what happened there was an invasion of his privacy, and it was an example of that site being extremely poorly managed by the moderators.
I still, you know what? We're going to have to disagree on this one
because he
elected to be a public persona, and when you elect to be a public, there's a certain amount of trade off there.
I mean,
if you
he elected be, as far as it was his job.
He didn't have to take the frickin' job. If you take that job, that's the job.
Okay. So let me read
right.
Let me read
it.
Let me read it.
I mean, that's what they were paying him for. They were paying him to be the front guy for Microsoft.
Let me read a post. An announcement on the NeoGAF.
Okay.
Okay, and this is by the moderators. And this is point number one. Divulging someone else's complete real name, address, phone number, email address, social security number, place of employment, or other highly personal information without his or her permission will result in a permanent ban. Divulging other publicly available information about someone else will be evaluated on a case-by-case basis from a perspective of the internet. Blah, blah, blah. Goes on for a while about privacy, blah, blah, blah. And then I highlighted one area. Obviously, people find value in social networking and other tools to communicate with friends, family, and other strangers. Each person has to balance their desire to be open with their desire to be private and secure.
Right.
So they're essentially saying that we want to protect your privacy. This is the rules that we're making for our site. Now, one has to ask the question of if they broke their own rules as a site, should they shut their own site down?
Oh, come on, man. A bad guy within their group did something boneheaded and stupid.
Okay, so
he broke the rules.
Okay, what was... I think there's later a post where they apologized and said, but that went unnoticed.
Yeah.
No one cared.
I believe they did.
Right. Yeah. But the damage is still done. And so here's another example of...
And his reputation was impacted.
His reputation... I do not disagree. His reputation was fully
And you can
impacted.
Probably see, like, his perspective. In a thread where everyone's making fun of him, you can imagine a moment of weakness, you do the private message, you know?
You have no idea how many emails, instant messages, and posts I have typed
This may come as to a surprise, but you know, I think all of us here, people on the internet, might not all like us.
So
yeah. I do take it personal. I totally take it personal. But someone a long time ago taught me: type it all out, get it out of your system, and then click delete.
Sure, sure. And that works sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't. Here's another example of some of this stuff. And this is a conference at the local university, Brock University, and there was this one thing that I just happened to sit in. I knew nothing about it, called cyberstalking. Okay. And do you guys remember the video of the kind of heavyset kid who did the Star Wars thing?
Star Wars Kid.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if I didn't know the true story behind this, and I found it really interesting. So the Star Wars Kid did not volunteer to make that video.
What?
No. He was pretty much forced to do it under threat of violence.
By his family or friends?
By his friends.
Wow.
Okay, so...
That's awful.
Oh, it's not finished yet. This is nothing. Okay, so you think that's bad, okay, in the embarrassment? Once that got out, he had to drop out of school for 3 or 4 years, seek psychological counseling.
Of course. I mean, it's terrible.
Okay, and his life was affected forever. And no one knows that because it's all lost under the loss of reciprocity and technology in our society. And we have to look at it and say, how are our laws going to keep up with this social responsibility? So now let's talk more specifically about the NeoGAF and some of the things that go on there. And now let's talk about...
I feel like such a simpleton because honestly, like as this conversation has gotten more complex and fleshed out, it's kind of like just kind of distilling down to me of there are bad people in the world and they do bad things.
To me, it's kind of realizing like, wow, so much of the internet community is based on like Schadenfreude and like... In watching other people fail and taking weird pleasure in the fact that it isn't you and laughing from the sidelines.
And there's a lot of people who slow down and watch car wrecks.
It's a bullying playground mentality, but I think Dennis is trying to get at is that the playground rules, like, they're gone because there's no penalty for...
There's no penalty. So what I did, if you look at my NeoGAF post, and I said it pretty succinctly. Okay, the first thing I want everyone to understand... It's been pretty clear that people are trying to judge something without playing it, which I think is ridiculous.
It happens all the time.
Happens all the time. And on the NeoGAF, there's no penalty. It's this weird kind of... And when you look at the player of games, he had to figure out the economy and what people cared about. So I sort of sat back, and there was this one instance for me that I learned something very valuable. There was an incident a long time ago on the NeoGAF where I did something that resulted in something very damaging and something that was very embarrassing for me that I think... was something I never want to happen again. And this one person posted about essentially Silicon Knights not being the true creators of Legacy of Kain. And that goes way back to, just hear me out. This person had went through all the credits, assumed that Crystal Dynamics had made it and we hadn't. And there's a big history behind this. We actually were in the litigation about this. And that was part of the litigation that Crystal Dynamics actually went around and told people that we were just an outsourcing art house and did none of the story. And we had a really hard time getting work for a while in the industry. It caused a tremendous amount of damage. I know for me personally, I didn't know if I was going to survive it, result of my partner pretty much leaving the company. It was horrid. And anyway, this person looking through the credits was confident that the people who made the story for Legacy Kain were now at other companies, and they weren't at Silicon Knights, and Tohuman was going to suck, all this kind of stuff, blah, blah, blah. And so I slowly went through and pointed out that was absolutely wrong, and I embarrassed him in front of the community on NeoGAF, which was a huge mistake, and I apologize, and I'm not going to say his name, but I'm sorry. But then later, the worst thing that happened is that in his name tag...
His tag.
They said, owned by Dennis Dyack. Sound familiar? Owned by Dennis Dyack, and they pointed to the link in which... That whole forum thread, that guy stopped posting for months.
But the fact that he's right now, again, disparaging Tohuman on that message board.
Oh, massively. And I can't make that up except...
Right. I mean, how do you win that? You don't. You know?
And I'm not here to do that, but yeah. I do know... So I just looked this guy up immediately. And I know he's really close to SK, actually, within an hour. And I was like, well, maybe we turned him down for an interview. I found out, but that's not any of that's true. And all I would say is, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean that. And when I saw the result of that, I was like, man, I'm never going to do that again. And so all I can say, and I'll put this out right now, you know who you are. If you want to come down to the launch party, you're invited. Come on down. Contact me through email. And I'd love to have you at the party. So that being said, that tag...
Well, it's one of the only currencies they have.
It is the currency.
On that forum.
So these guys are disparaging the game. Now, this is the thing. It's not just the posters. It's the moderators there, the people who are supposed to moderate. The idea of a moderation is that you're supposed to keep things civil. You have a social responsibility to the forums so people feel free to say what they want. And these moderators are changing forum topics.
But when there's no hard and fast rules, like there was a thread a while ago where if anybody even like made one comment against Penny Arcade, they were automatically banned. Whereas like it's a free for all to diss Silicon Knights up and down.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? And I mean, I'm actually coming from Evil Avatar. You know, I was a moderator there. So I kind of can look at it from that point of view too and see where that's coming from. And NeoGAF is, you know, an even bigger community. There's even more moderators than there were at Evil Avatar. And I think part of the deal is it can just get so confusing. Like, there's not any structure, you know?
Well, I looked at the forums this morning and just to see how things... When I did that post, I assumed the whole place was going to melt down. And I knew what I was doing from a perspective of I was basically calling people out who had no possible way of assessing the game, saying how crappy it was going to be, pulling stuff, you know, just out of their imaginations, making GIF animations and saying how bad animations were, whatever. And just basically saying, all right, well then let's make a little bet. And they called out Metacritics, which I know is completely meaningless. So I said, okay, let's do something even more completely. Let's do something so completely meaningless that the change of the tag will occur, which is the only currency for those guys. I don't care if my tag is changed, whatever. But
So the rule is if it gets below a certain Metacritic, your tag is going to read owned by NeoGAF.
Right, and if it gets above a certain Metacritic, which they say is terrible, then it'll be owned by 2Human, which isn't a person. I wanted to keep it impersonal. And just think about this. The moderators go around and change those tags to whatever they want, and people are effective massively. And you have to wonder, is that liable? Is that cyber stalking? Are you permanent? And you have no choice. They changed mine to still trying to get it or something like that. And I remember at one point I said I really like it because there's a lot of things I'm trying to get.
Oh, it said still figuring it out.
Still figuring it out.
I think it's very positive.
I think it is too. And you know what it resulted? It resulted in a Tourette's syndrome from a couple posters saying that how much they hated me and I didn't get it and I didn't like that I was happy. And it was just – and so the bottom line on this was, okay – And I was just like, give me a score or something. And I knew they had no idea because none of them had played it. And then at the end result, before the tag got locked, they wanted to use 90% as something that was terrible. And I was like,
yeah, 90 and below, complete failure.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I think they're meaningless, but it just goes to show you that there's really, when you finally can figure out in this game, in the player of games, he figured out how to win the game. And it ended up in this complete planet just destruction, and the game never finished. I knew this would never finish, okay? But it ended up, and all I wanted to point out to people was that this is so ridiculous. A couple of people saying, shouldn't we play the game before I post? Okay, you're way too smart for that thread. Get out. You're way ahead of the game.
I guess what surprised me about your thread, Dennis, is that there was an overwhelmingly positive response. A lot of people saying four, a lot of people coming out of the woodwork who don't normally post.
That's right.
And overall, the tone was like, wow, okay, maybe this forum isn't a hive of scum and villainy. Maybe there are people here who are going to give this game a chance and keep an open mind. But then this new thread, which was created like 2 days later after Chris Kohler from Wired did his pre/review and like the cascading pre/reviews that came after that, you've not posted in that thread. And that thread's over 30 pages long, and it's become like the hate-on of all hate-ons, full of animated GIFs, 2Human sucks, animation's terrible, this game is a disaster, worse than Lair. But throughout that thread, so it's like, why hasn't Dennis posted? Why hasn't Dennis posted? He was lurking at 1 o'clock. He was lurking at 4
they
o'clock.
They take screenshots of me lurking.
And it's obvious that like they just want you to get in there. And once you get in there and pay attention to them, then they might, you know, shape up a little bit and not be so juvenile. But
the reason I didn't post is because I knew I was going to talk about it here.
Right.
And the end result is this. The press are now being influenced by this stuff. Okay, one preview review is why you should be for or against 2Human. And it's supposed to be a preview. Did it talk about the game very much? Not really. But basically, from a perspective of Chris posted in that forum several times and a screenshot to prove that he played it. And now we're now playing to the forums in our reviews and trying to incite the mob. And from a perspective of, what are we really doing here? Do people really...
I don't know. What are we... I feel like my head is about to explode listening to this. I'm seriously, like, I've been biting my tongue as long as I can. So I have to jump in for a second. First of all, what the fuck are we doing, like, validating GAF and all these forums with so much thought put into this? Come on, Dennis. Like, these guys, you have done an amazingly well-thought-out societal analysis of what piece of culture these forums represent within the microcosm of the video game world. How much does that really matter to your game? I mean, really, or to games in general, not to your game. How much does that really matter to games in general? People are going to go, like, I'm sorry, here's my, let me get going for a second. I get to get going for a second
now. You're
going
nuts.
the whole idea that video gaming is even reliant on these niche people anymore is outmoded. We're at the end of that era. How much do we even need the big three game sites? How much do you really need 1UP and GameSpot and IGN anymore? We are like an anachronism. We are the hardcore, but the hardcore are not where it's at anymore. The ones that are being successful in the entertainment business are the ones that are reaching beyond that. The Rock Bands, the Guitar Heroes, the Peggles, the things that like people are like incorporating gaming into part of their overall entertainment sphere. And those are people who are participating in this. Like, let these guys do their thing. Let them be upset. And how much does it really matter? And how much of that is all part of the drama of being part of the message board forum, you know, show and spectacle?
Well, it does matter. It does matter. And the reason I say what does matter is because how many, if you look at the previews that just came out, how many were influenced from that specific post? I think you can find a lot in there. So suddenly...
I hope not. Oh, yeah. That's sad.
Garnet, you can.
And you like, can.
You haven't been in this as long as I've been in this for 8 years, and I've been in gaming forever, but I've seen in the last 5 years the negative effects of message board mentality trickling down to first the blogs and then to the mainstream sites, and it really is happening.
Well, we got to get the hell over it. That's ridiculous.
But we can't.
How do you get over it?
You can't get over it.
You just don't worry about it.
No, but you can't do that. You cannot, in my opinion, stick your head in the sand.
I'm not sticking my head in the sand. I'm sticking my head over the sand and saying, wow, whatever, sand, go away.
But well, it's not. It's going to affect you. So if you take, if you look at Henry Jenkins' book, Convergent Culture.
Yes.
That's an excellent, which I have there on the floor.
We have it right here with an iPod on the cover.
That's right. If you look at Survivor, that whole business model is built after people talking around the water cooler and internet forums. Okay, if you look at Star Wars, all the stories have been generated outside. And what's happening in our industry now...
But there's a much larger market of people watching Survivor and talking about Survivor around the water cooler. And talking around the water cooler...
The water cooler existed before the internet did.
The people talking around the water cooler is not Gaff.
But the Gaff is the new water cooler.
I would disagree with you on that.
Well, people might say, well how come...
Facebook is the new water cooler.
Sure.
But people,
sure.
People on Gaff, people everywhere are like, well, why don't you just give them a demo? Because then they can know for themselves.
Believe.
And you promised a demo on Gaff a year ago.
Believe. They dredged that. Dennis Dyack is for a demo.
All right.
Okay, so...
All right.
So...
However...
But so here's the thing. Here's
dot,
the thing.
Dot, dot.
And I really mean this. And I'm saying this now. So here's the end rub.
Okay.
And why I went through all this. For two reasons. If you look at Peter Drucker, and I believe in the society, unethical business practice is like a cancer in our society. And if you're going to look at the Neil Gaff Forum as a nonprofit organization, if it does not reform itself, it's eventually going to start to crumble. And there's going to be a point where they step over the line where someone's going to shut them down. And that would be a loss for everyone. And I have to say to people, when I looked at the thread this morning, I saw a moderator ask, when someone said they liked a human, or I disagree with someone, are you stupid? This is a moderator. And so now, not only are they ad hominem attacks on people who have complete control over these forums, ultimate power, and I'm saying this, and the question I have to ask to the moderators of the Gaff, are you going to follow your own rules? Is people, are you posting people making GIFs of myself, okay, that are, I would say, attacking me, okay?
Personal attacks.
Personal attacks.
And you are a user, so they're attacking another forum user.
That's right.
Right.
Why haven't 180 people been banned now?
No, because people think it's funny.
They think it's funny. And the question is, okay, if I wanted to move in and shut that place down, do I have a grounds? It would be under their own forum policy.
But if you destroyed Gaff, then they might actually come and kill you in real life.
Well, you know, and I'm not threatening to do that, but what I'm saying is this. What I have found with companies, if they're unethical, eventually, if they continue to be unethical, they make mistakes, they hurt everyone, and they will eventually go down. And I think the Neil Gaff now and other forums, as they get into this without good moderation that are not managed well, are not only hurting society and not only hurting the video games industry, they're in decline. And they need to reform quickly before people stop listening to them. And the most interesting thing is, I cannot wait personally for some of the, and I hope some of the press learn a lesson. If they're basing their reviews on what their influences is from NeoGAF, I think To Human speaks for itself. And I love the game. You guys know we just did the 1UP show, and I look forward to what you guys are going to review. I was really happy that you guys had the integrity to do a pure preview. They talked about the game and made no judgments either way, good or bad.
At this point, I'm wondering, are you afraid that because you went public and posted on this board and like put yourself out there, that kind of perpetuated the smear campaign that's happening from these blogs and
I think reviewers? There's a lot of people that are concerned about the timing. And I want to be really clear to everyone involved in the situation that, you know, I really don't know. That's one of the things about technology. It's impossible to predict where this is going to go. We're in unknown territory. I said that before we started here. No one could have guessed that priests, when they invented the clock, so they could regulate their times when they did prayers, would result in time days, people moving away from religious culture. You just can't predict it. So I don't know where this is going to go. All that I can say is I wanted to point out some social inequity that people really need to start thinking about on these forums. And if the moderators and the people who run this site think they're not doing any damage, they are sorely mistaken. And it's only a matter of time before something very bad happens. And we need to be, as a group, socially responsible. And I am the type of person, for whatever reason, if I think something is wrong, I will stand up and say it. And I have been told on some of the things I do, it's the right thing, Dennis, but I don't know if it was the smart thing. And Garnet, I know we talked about things and all these things here, and sort of not everyone could see, but Garnet gave me a look, and you might have been doing that right now, and I hope not. But I just want to make the one statement of, I think what's happening there is wrong, and I think the site has potential. I think all the forums have potential, but you need to think about these things before you do them, and people need to understand the effects of reciprocity and the lack of communication that occur in these forums. And that's one of the messages into human. And the real question is, play the game before you make a decision, and you're going to have the opportunity to do that. So I want everyone to take all this stuff in mind and play the game. And that's the end message.
It's a message of peace.
Makes sense.
Olive branch.
That was so how do you think that was a great wrap up. I'm curious how you think this is going to be received by the very audience to which you're messaging. What do you think the first post is that's being typed right now?
I don't know.
You have to have thought about it some.
Lols, Dennis is lame. No, but I would actually think...
No, it will be bad.
It will be bad. Oh, no, it's going to be negative.
No, but I think actually, you know, Dennis is talking to these people as people, and he goes on there as a person, and like... it's not a joke. It's not a meme. It's real. And, like, they're not used to that. And
yeah, I'm scared of it. I mean, you follow where I'm coming from, is that, like, to me, I don't take the message boards extremely seriously, because to me, I go in there, I read it, it's fun.
But there isn't a Garnet smear campaign.
So there have been plenty of them.
So there's a secondary point to this, and it's a little bit more on scientism. Let's assume Metacritics is bad, and you guys have heard about people putting clauses in contracts.
Right.
Okay. There are people who do marketing and PR surveys that see what the responses are in the forums.
That's lazy.
People do it.
That's lazy, and they're not even looking at the right people. I mean, that's not even doing any sort of they have no idea what the demographic is of the forum membership.
They don't know when they're reading a viral marketer's post.
People track it, and the question that needs to be asked is, with all of these layers of loss, reciprocity, and accountability, people need to understand that these things are almost completely meaningless. And the whole idea of that tag, okay, is almost lost in thought from the fact that they were so afraid to get their names tagged. And the other thing is, I think that when they change someone else's tag like they did mine, I'm pretty thick-skinned, but some people, like the thing that happened with that one poster, that's really assaulting someone.
That is. That, you know what? I mean, I guess that's the problem. The problem is twofold. It's like, it's not very serious, but people do get drawn up and caught up in it. And as soon as they do, then it becomes serious. And then problems like this come up. Like the person you're talking about who didn't post. It's obviously an issue when someone who's been as part of the community and enjoying it feels like they can no longer participate simply because of some one happenstance that puts them mistagged.
There are some incidents, and Susan was telling me about it earlier, about someone posting and telling someone that there were a girl... that committed suicide because she believed some of the posts that were going on.
Ugh.
Okay, and you have...
There's a mom who's being tried as posing as a 13-year-old girl and saying, you should just kill yourself.
No,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She was posing as a boy.
Yeah.
This was... You are a waste of space. You should like the internet is dredging up some really dark things because it does remove you from the accountability and responsibility.
Yes, it does. We all know. I mean, it definitely removes you from accountability and responsibility.
And the bottom line is this. So society needs to catch up with technology. We need to understand these things. But specifically speaking to these forum managers and these moderators, if you don't do something about what's happening right now, which is really horrible and having very negative effects out there, whether you believe it or not, something is going to happen that's going to force you to, and it's not going to be good. And we really need to think about this. And the whole sarcastic line of the internet is serious business is becoming real. It's no longer sarcastic. And if the internet is becoming serious business, I remember a time back when, you know, we were early with Nintendo and people were thinking internet advertising was a joke.
Well, yeah.
Okay. That was a long time ago, but people didn't take it seriously. And now it's...
Totally took it not seriously.
Yeah. And it's changed. Society has changed. Technology has changed. And we need to see how we're being affected by this. So if there was a reason why I did that post, this is the reason, so I could talk about it here and make a statement. To Human is being judged on things that are not real. And I stand behind it. But I say to people, play it yourself. But in the end, we are the people that have the potential to influence and make change. So someone has to stand up and say it. We just, in my opinion, I've been told so many times, please don't post on the forums because it's going to result in nothing any good. And I hope that this post results in something good. And that's why I did it. And that's the end of the story.
Rehumanize the forums. Remember, there's like a real person on the other side of the keyboard.
Absolutely.